Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Professor Jeffrey Hirsch, associate professor at the University of North Carolina, the School of Law there, about the NLRB and the recent attacks by the radical right. Look, that's been their shiny thing. That's been their diversion point. That's the distraction that they want to. Here's the target. Here's the red meat, crazies. Go after this. Because most people don't know what it is the National Labor Relations Board does and how important it is to keeping industrial peace in this country, and what a great program it's been over the years. Personally, I'm kind of the mindset at this point, the way that the right is going after them just doing their regular course of work, is maybe let's get rid of it and take everything back to the streets. But, you know, there's some decisions coming down that, you know, may help workers, which is why the Republican on the board is threatening to resign. Unprecedented. I'm going to quit so nothing can get done. You know, is what I would expect. But we're going to talk with Professor Hirsch about that. Also in the second hour, Mark Anderson from Daily Kos Labor going to be here talking about what's going on in Wisconsin, the recall effort, their lieutenant governor, who's like ours, a crackpot. I'm really enjoying watching the radical right out there try and figure out how to get around what they've done and the messaging that they're trying to put out. And there's part of me that's going, maybe the moneyed people are going to throw them under the bus, and they know it. So that'll be interesting to find out. Also in the second hour, Abe Amoros, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union, LIUNA, going to be here talking about what we need to do to get the economy moving. We need jobs. And, you know, you look at what we talked about yesterday, the state senator from Arizona saying, well, we're going to build our fence, we're going to get it with donations, and we're going to use prison labor, pay them 50 cents an hour and put them to work. Gotta love Arizona. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Appreciate to hear from you. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails. Personally, big news today, possibly a sad occasion. Herman Cain had a conference call this morning with his staff, with his senior staff, said that he is reassessing whether he's going to stay in the race. He said he'll give him the final decision over the next several days. And, you know, you look at Herman, and I've sent this all along. He was on a book tour in states across the country. He had no ground game. He didn't have bumper stickers. He didn't have yard signs. He did none of that stuff. It was a book tour. It was a way to get his name out. It was a way to score points with the Koch brothers, because they're brothers by another mother, if you remember that. It was a way to try and curry some favor with the billionaire class, and maybe the next job. You know, he tried to do this job for a while, being a radio host. Maybe that's what he wanted to get into on a bigger scale. A lot of things that I thought him going in, being president, not one of them. He did his book tour, made a boatload of money. Then he got some notoriety. Then he got some fame. And then someone started looking at him, and he's going, hey, I might be able to be president, forgetting that, well, everybody's got a past. And as I've said in the past, I'm not someone who looks to you and says, well, you know, I'm better than you. Or follow me because, you know, my example, I'm pristine, or I'm virginial, or as the one state senator from Arizona said, and I kind of agree with her. She says, she's known Herman Cain for years, and he has never been anything but a gentleman. And my first thought is, okay, well, you're probably not his type. And she says, you know, I'm not an unattractive woman, yeah, but you're probably not his type. And she adds that, you know, in politics, you know, we want a virgin to do a hooker's job. And there's some truth in that. We want people who are going to say, hey, we're pristine, we're free from sin. And then when they actually have a past, we beat them up for it. Now, I wish Herman would have come out and said, you know what? Yeah, I made a mistake. And, yeah, I had this affair, as lots of people do. And you know, the women who came out and said that I harassed them, it wasn't me harassing them. It was me saying, you know, we went to dinner, we flirted around a little bit. Yeah, things happen between a man and a woman. Had he come out and done that, I think he would have curried more favor, other than taking the normal stance of denial. Nobody likes denial. People want to, you want honesty. And I think had Herman done that, he'd have been better off. The tweet of the day comes from Andrew, NBC News. He writes, just ask Kane if he plans to leave the race. Responded, 999, 999, we're doing fine. So there you go. What I'm finding funny is the cat fight that's coming out of this Ginger White coming into the spotlight. One of her business partners, because they had done some cycling business together. She's now come out, you know, a scorned business partner, I should say. She's come forward saying that this Ginger White, the woman who said that she and Herman had a 13-year affair, this woman saying that Ginger White never mentioned Herman's name. And I go, well, did you really think you were that good of friends based on your past? Because, you know, generally when people are screwing up, or particularly proud of what it is that they're engaged in, maybe a 13-year affair with a married man, they rarely go into the streets and shout it from the mountaintops. They rarely go out and tell people what they're doing. So I'm not surprised that she never told this woman, especially this woman, who they had had a very interesting relationship as it's being reported. But, you know, it goes back to something my grandfather always said. You know, if you're screwing up, make sure you're the only one who knows you're screwing up. Because then you got about a 50% chance of not getting caught, of not being ratted out, because you got about a 50% chance of not ratting yourself out, but generally you do. Other news today, Rick Perry evidently doesn't know what the voting age is, so they're beating him up over that. And again, you know, I guess, you know, as I put on my Facebook page, I know people with pet rocks smarter than Rick Perry. Thought the voting age was 21. So there you go. Consider it a gaffe, a flub, whatever. At least he wasn't like Rick Lazio going after the elementary school kids, like happened several years ago. So, yesterday, did everybody get on their little computer and do the little fingers flying thing? Did you do the Cyber Monday? Did everyone go like sheep? Did we all go to where we were told? You know, like Black Friday, we all got out there Thursday night, an all day Friday, and Small Business Saturday got out there, and on Cyber Monday. Fact of the matter is, a lot of people did. In fact, saw a 22% increase in sales from last year, according to ComScore Incorporated. They're saying $1.25 billion in sale, which is a big record. According to CoreLogic, they're saying that the average online order, about $200. And you look at some of these, these retailers who, they've got the advantage. They don't have brick and mortar and they're not paying the tax. And, someone had asked Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, if it were fair that Amazon has this comparative advantage. And, you know, they asked, what should the legislator do to kind of level the playing field? And Scott said, you know, it's not fair. You shouldn't be treated differently. Whether you're selling online or in brick and mortar stores, it's not fair. But at the same time, he says, my focus is not to do it where we raise taxes. I don't want to take money out of the private sector. And I'm going, hold on a second. If you have a state sales tax and you're not collecting it from a portion of people who are who are selling things in your state, aren't you then harming your state? And if you look at what the researchers from the University of Tennessee had to say, the loophole that is this online tax thing has cost states some $10 billion last year. And you know, here in Pennsylvania, you've got the Department of Revenue telling people, hey, you gotta pay your sales tax. Send us in the check. Send us in the here's my sales tax from Cyber Monday check. And I'm sure they're gonna have enforcement people looking over your shoulder. I'm sure it's coming. So get ready for the knock at the door. After all, we need to keep you people in line. You know, the drillers and those companies who have one of those magical boxes in Delaware, we'll leave them alone. But you make sure you pay your 6% and on time. so that, you know, that designer candle maker you got for Aunt Betty, make sure you pay your tax on. Or the rare DVD collection of the Wild Wild Leave It to Beaver Uncut Edition for Uncle Ed. Make sure you pay your taxes on that. Because they sure will go after you. Not going after the drillers, not going after the Delaware loophole, going to make sure that those massive subsidies, those massive tax breaks for the very wealthy are well taken care of. You and me, they're going to make sure that they get every dime that they think they're entitled to from us. Other than in Florida, who I guess Rick Scott thinks, yeah, you know, what the heck. Now, doesn't that harm the people who work in your state, though? I mean, if you really stop and think about it, isn't it harming the brick-and-mortar stores on some point? Because I forget who it was. I think it was CoreLogic, but don't hold me to that, who said that 36% of the spending this year for the holiday season is going to be online. So if 36% of the holiday spending is going through this magic portal that does not make sure the sales tax is paid, what's that going to do to the states that are already struggling? What's it going to do to education? What's it going to do to your property tax? What's it going to do to, you know, roads, bridges, police, fire, whatever? What's it going to do to all of that if we're allowing that revenue to go away? Because, you know, Rick Scott says, well, we don't want to take money out of the private sector. And his goal would be to do away with the tax altogether so you have no money at all. Not going to happen. But, you know, as you're looking at this, you're talking about job losses. And, unfortunately, the possibility of more people unemployed. And there's, you know, we're coming on to another hostage situation, coming up to another deadline, to another crisis. The people with the National Employment Law Project are estimating that by mid-February, about 2.1 million people are going to lose their unemployment benefits if Congress does nothing. And look, the Republicans have no appetite for helping the unemployed. They've already classified unemployed people as lazy and shiftless. They've already put that out there. So they are going to make sure that this doesn't get passed unless, again, we give out massive pounds of flesh to the very wealthy, like we did the last time. If you remember the last fight over unemployment, which was, you know, the lame duck of 2010, if you remember that, we had to give them the pound of flesh right up front. We had to extend the tax break. We had to extend the Bush tax handouts to make sure that, you know, they were well compensated. So that, you know, well, you know, we had to make sure they were taken care of before we helped the people who really needed it. I mean, understand, the unemployed needed it. I don't know that the 1% really did. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, this whole thing with the NLRB has just got me angry and frustrated, and I wanted to get somebody on here to talk about the what it's all about, what the NLRB stands for. When we come back, we're going to talk with the good Professor Jeffrey Hirsch. Stick around. Back after this. You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Mediation will begin Tuesday at Hostess Brands in an effort to save more than 18,000 jobs. U.S. Bankruptcy Judge Robert Drain Monday urged the mediation effort as Hostess went to court seeking permission to liquidate the company. The hearing was adjourned until Wednesday to give the unions and the company a chance to meet privately under mediation. As Hostess Brands went to bankruptcy court Monday to secure the legal green light for liquidation, unions representing Hostess workers filed objections. In its opposition document, the Bakery Workers Union, BCTGM, said Hostess failed not because of union workers, but because its six management teams over the last 8 years were unable to make it a profitable, successful business enterprise. The bakery workers say despite commitments from the company that resources derived from worker concessions would be plowed back into the company, Those investments never materialized. Instead, the union says, quote, helpless Hostess employees watched as money that was supposed to go towards capital investment, product development, plant improvement, and new equipment went to executive bonuses and payouts to the hedge funds that own Hostess brands, end quote. The bakery workers say the company illegally withdrew from all Taft-Hartley pension plans, netting the company at least $50 million. Then the CEO was given a 300% raise, and nine other top executives got raises of 35 to 80%. The union said that Bain Capital-like private equity funds then came in to squeeze profits from Hostess for their multimillionaire investors. Strike action at the Port of Oakland continues, Jesse Russell reports.
Port of Oakland workers, represented by the Service Employees International Union Local 1021, are in the middle of a two-day strike. The strike started Monday morning with the workers attempting to highlight unfair labor practices by management. According to the union, executives at the port have illegally withheld vital information related to bargaining and have unilaterally changed the terms of the contract. Executives of the Port of Oakland have been facing a great deal of criticism for reports of misuse of funds. Most recently, Port of Oakland Executive Director Omar Benjamin resigned from his post when it was discovered he submitted an expense of more than $4,500 for a business meeting held at a strip club. Even with the news of wasted funds, but also a $37 million surplus, the port has been seeking a 15% wage and benefit cut on the back of the workers. The strike continues today.
Informational pickets are underway at airports across the country as flight attendants at Spirit Airlines press for a fair contract and prepare to strike if necessary. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says 5 years of negotiations have failed to reach a contract at Spirit Airlines. The union earlier this year asked the National Mediation Board for arbitration, which could lead to a 30-day cooling-off period and a strike deadline.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If the federal government continues to do the kinds of things that this administration is trying to do through the back door, through the National Labor Relations Board, that's killing our free market system.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
The NLRB has become a political sycophant for labor unions.
And one of the things the Congress should do immediately is defund the National Labor Relations Board.
It seems to me that what we're seeing is a ceding of power from Congress to the NLRB and other agencies.
Really is a freedom versus tyranny issue.
I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy, but if I can just bamboozle you,
what a wonderful world where workers had no rights. And, you know, I go back to the good old days where, you know, you had the kings and queens and, well, everyone else. And you look at what the attacks that have been going on. The right wing has been in full attack mode of the National Labor Relations Board. And tomorrow is, you know, kind of a lot of people are watching, going to see what happens, because supposedly there's some proposed rule changes coming to where the appeals process is going to be after the elections, which I think is in a lot of cases a good thing. But all eyes are on the Republican on the board. Will he resign? And, well, what happens then? That's why I've asked Jeffrey Hirsch, associate professor of law there at the University of North Carolina School of Law. Professor Hirsch, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You know, you look at what's going on and the messaging that's going on, and I guess the first question I've got is, what's going on, a grand conspiracy with the NLRB, or is this just them working the way they're intended to work?
No, it's definitely not a conspiracy. Like other agencies, the NLRB can make rules. It's a little unusual. The agency actually, unlike most other agencies, doesn't usually issue rules. It usually makes decisions through cases, but it has done rules before, and the whole idea that there's a problem with the current way elections are run is not new at all, and in fact, you could probably dial this back to the hoopla over the Employee Free Choice Act early in the Obama's term, which is, this is really sort of coming out of that.
And to me, I would have liked to have seen the Employee Free Choice Act passed. It would have been it was the first thing that I thought they should have done to give people the right to collectively bargain and bargain for some of the profits that have happened, because we've seen companies across this country stealing back those hard-fought gains over the last 50 years.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, one of the things that unions have been complaining about for decades now is that the current NLRB election process is really tilted heavily towards employers. And, in fact, you see unions, an increasing number, even of trying to avoid the election process, and in fact, trying to convince employers to voluntarily recognize them. The card check provision in the Employee Free Choice Act would have been a big part of that. That failed, obviously, and what we have now is a much, much, much narrower, much weaker attempt just to simply speed up elections. And that's really all it is to try to quicken the pace that elections are run, and then more importantly, for the very few elections, it's only less than 10% that are even challenged, to try to reduce the appeals process. So if a union does win, they can actually start bargaining for the workers.
Which is, you know, I would think it was in the best interest of all parties involved. You know, I remember being involved in the organizing campaign of overnight transportation when I was a Teamster, you know, years ago. And the Union Pacific Railroad spent $100 million, which would have been more than they would have spent on contracts into the next generation.
Yep.
But it was all about we're gonna impose our will, and you are not going to have the right. And I look at what's going on right now, and the tone, especially from the Republicans, is that workers really don't have rights in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic that, going back to the Employee Free Choice Act, I mean, the complaint about card check recognition was that secret ballot elections are sacrosanct, they're super important, we need to promote those. Well, now we have the board trying to protect secret ballot elections, and they're still complaining. And, yeah, I mean, it just seems that the complaint isn't about elections. They don't want unions, period. Because, you know, again, this is a very, very weak improvement over the current process. There's really not much to complain about if you're on the employer's side.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty.
Anyway.
There's plenty of opportunity to harass and intimidate and and berate and fire your employees. And I'm not saying that all employers are like that, but you know, this decision is for those handful that may be.
No, I that's exactly right. I mean, the you know, most elections get the terms and how it's going to be run and who can vote are settled. I mean, it's over 90% before the elections even run. We're just talking about really the ones that are challenged, the ones where typically, not all the time, but typically the employers are trying to delay things. And the board's just simply trying to narrow that opportunity a little bit. There's far more things that, in fact, when they initially proposed this rule in late June, there were several other provisions that would have been more aggressive. Most of those have been dropped. This is only a small fraction of the ones initially proposed.
Right. You know, and looking at this, and I'm kind of waiting tomorrow in anticipation to see what Brian Hayes does. Threat of quitting, this threat of resigning, basically rendering the board worthless. There's part of me that goes, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we no longer have the board, and everything goes to the streets.
Yeah, well, we're going to get that anyway, whether he resigns or not by the end of December when Member Becker's recess appointment expires. So it's just a matter of timing at this point. There's almost no chance that new board members will be approved before the next election. Yeah, but it's curious. I mean, I don't know what Member Hayes is going to do. If I had to guess, I'd say he's not going to quit. But that's only a guess. The other thing, option that he could do is, rather than quit, simply don't show up. And there's a question, at least, whether or not that would render any sort of decision inoperable. I don't think it would, but there's at least a valid question about that. Or he may come, vote, lose, and then just wait for it to go through the normal challenge process.
Right, because, you know, I got to remember during the Bush years, and there were an awful lot of NLRB decisions I did not agree with during the Bush years, and the Kentucky River cases, you know, pop into my mind immediately, where they're, you know, they're basically stealing workers' rights to organize, because for 5 minutes today you did, you know, the task of a supervisor, so that precludes you from membership. And I don't remember, and maybe you've got a better memory than I do, but I don't remember the Democrats on the board running for the hills and saying that, you know, we're not going to allow this board to continue its work.
No. In fact, I was an attorney of the board during the early part of the Bush years. And to my knowledge, and I may be wrong about this, but to my knowledge, no board member ever even threatened to resign or even raised the possibility to deprive the board of a quorum. Now, part of that, there hasn't been that many opportunities until recent years to do that because the board hasn't been only at three members except for certain periods of time. Now, some people I've heard are comparing this to the Wisconsin Democrats leaving town. So I guess there's an argument on the other side of that, too. But
yeah, I mean,
it's certainly unprecedented for the board.
But this is not. This is supposed to be a neutral body.
Exactly.
To me, this should not be a political body. Their work is to keep, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is about keeping industrial peace and being that arbiter of what's right and wrong in the workplace. It shouldn't be a political thing.
Yeah, I guess maybe in an ideal world, although the tradition of, you know, three members coming from the White House's party and two from the opposing party has always injected a bit of politics into it. But of course, that's become far more serious probably over the last 20 years, where it's just the politics surrounding board nominations become much more heightened. I mean, you used to have more, you know, professors and other people viewed as more neutral on the board, and you rarely ever see that nowadays. It's either union members, you know, people aligned with unions or people aligned with employers. And then these package deals have also ramped up the politicization of the board as well.
Right. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Professor Jeffrey Hirsch, Associate Professor at the University of North Carolina School of Law. You know, the big case also being this, what's going on with Boeing, a little bit south of where you're at. You know, and again, to me, it's not about Boeing. Has, in my opinion, has almost virtually nothing to do with them. Has the right whether do workers in this country have rights? Do we have the right to strike without repercussion? That, to me, is the bigger issue than whether Boeing opens a plant or they have to close it.
No, I agree. And in fact, I mean, the law involved in the Boeing case is fairly straightforward. I mean, and in fact, the vast majority of times, employers can open up businesses and new work wherever the heck they want. What they can't do is make that decision based on an attempt to restrict workers' rights. And that's the allegation at Boeing. I mean, you have several executives say that point blank. And in fact, the general counsel should have been criticized if he didn't pursue this case. But obviously that, you know, the politics entered on the Boeing case. Boeing's a very sophisticated employer with a long history of labor issues. And so they've ramped things up. And in fact, I suspect to a large degree a lot of the mess involved with this election rule is coming out of the Boeing matter. I think this would have gone under the radar more if Boeing hadn't been an issue.
And, you know, again, what the issue being is the right has kind of grabbed onto this and saying, well, this is Obama paying the big labor contributors,
yeah.
which in reality, I mean, if you're any rational person who looks at what this president has done, I don't know how you could make the argument that he's paying back big labor since their number one priority was never even discussed, which is the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yes, if that's the case, they should get their money back.
Absolutely.
I mean, the first bill he signed was an employment discrimination bill. So that was somewhat helpful. But, yeah, as far as unions are concerned, I mean, he even took quite a while to appoint new board members. And a general counsel has never been officially appointed. The current one's enacting. I think in a lot of ways, I mean, not entirely all Obama's fault. He's obviously had a lot of resistance. But this has not been a particularly successful period for them. There's been some pullback from the large amount of damage that was done during the Bush administration. But the idea that somehow this is what the board is doing is unique is ridiculous. I mean, you know, there's the term during the Bush administration of the September massacre, where there was, you know, like a dozen cases or more that the board reversed some rulings over 40 years old. So this is small potatoes compared to what was done during the previous term.
Yeah, I wish labor and I wish working people would have reacted with the same type of visceral reaction that we're getting from the right during that time frame.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wish that to be the case. And you brought up the Lilly Ledbetter Act.
Right.
I would make the argument that labor got very little out of that because
women
who are protected under labor contracts, they don't have to worry about that. Everything's defined. Everything's right there. That's for people who aren't in labor unions and don't have a contract.
No, that's exactly right. Times some theory might be that the more protections that individual employees get, that's the worse for unions because they perhaps have less benefit to work. The big thing was the Employee Free Choice Act, and that, you know, it looked like at one point maybe there would be a settlement, but that obviously fizzled out, particularly after Scott Brown was elected.
Let me ask you a last line of questioning. In looking at the board, because I do believe in the concept of the board and the work that they do. You know, in looking backwards, because there's been a lot of attacks on them, what, in your opinion, is their charge? What are they supposed to be doing, and are they doing it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm somewhat biased, of course, as a former employee of the board. But, you know, I mean, their ultimate charge is to enforce the National Labor Relations Act. That includes unfair labor practices by both employers and unions. I mean, I personally had cases against unions that overstepped their bounds. And to run elections, and they, you know, they generally do quite a good job. And the vast majority of cases fly under the radar. Nobody hears anything about it. Now, I think there's been a lot of what their ability to do has been limited by the statute, which hasn't been amended in decades, and by courts, which have largely done a quite a restrictive reading of the act and limited what the board can do. So the law itself, I think, is somewhat limiting. But the board, and obviously there are certain periods where they've done more and other periods where they've done less, has overall done a good job.
You know, in looking at the board, you know, going back pre National Labor Relations Act, pre-board, what kind of conditions did workers see in the workplace before you had this? Because there's a lot of people who are saying, we need to get rid of it. It's no longer useful. I think it's important to go back pre-National Labor Relations Act and understand what the conditions were during that period.
Yeah, I mean, were deplorable. I mean, it's, you know, and of course, this is putting, the NLRA was one of the first big national workplace acts. It was sort of one of the switch in time that saved nine that finally broke through with the New Deal in the Supreme Court. And so you had, you know, horrible safety conditions. I mean, the Triangle Reuters fire where scores of women died because doors were locked and things like that. You know, you had extreme violence. I mean, on both sides as well. I mean, there's some great labor movies that detail that. You know, huge strikes that really gummed up the economy. There were all kinds of things. I mean, it was chaotic in a lot of ways. I think getting rid of the NLRA would be worse for workers than for employers. But employers should watch what they ask for, because it's not, there's going to be some cost to them as well. Again, there are limits in the act to what unions can do. And, you know, one of the primary purposes in the act is to preserve industrial peace. Although I should note as well, right, the other main purpose of the act is to promote collective bargaining and the idea that workers, there's an unequal bargaining power naturally, and that collective action and collective representation can address that.
And that's the other part of the attack. And you look at the attacks that are going on from the right, and it's all about taking your right away to that very thing, the ability to bargain over wages, hours, and conditions.
That's right.
Professor Hirsch, always great talking with you. I would love to have you back on again as this decision goes on and the NLRB continues the attack. It was great talking to you.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Let's see. Obama won both the popular vote and the Electoral College tally. Democrats didn't just add to their Senate majority, but added such feisty progressive new senators as Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, and Mazie Hirono. Even in the House, Dems won the national vote and gained 7 seats. Plus, progressives scored victories coast to coast on ballot initiatives. Wow, the only conclusion you can draw is that the Republican Party now has a mandate to set the policy agenda for the next 4 years. Huh? Astonishingly, that's the conclusion of the GOP's congressional leaders. I guess we should have expected as much from a party so deeply mired in delusion that its chief political guru, Karl Rove, kept hotly insisting on election night that Mitt Romney had won, even though he clearly lost. Later, it was surreal to hear Republican House Leader John Boehner declare, "We'll have as much of a mandate as Obama will." Then, going from surreal to insane, the GOP Senate sourpuss Mitch McConnell proclaimed, "Now it's time for the president to propose solutions that actually have a chance of passing the Republican-controlled House." Memo to Mitch and Boehner. America just had a year-long nationwide debate on whether to keep pampering Wall Street hucksters and tax dodgers, privatize Medicare and Social Security, continue whacking the country's social safety net, maintain fat subsidies for big oil, repeal Obamacare and other aspects of your coke-headed, tinkle-down, ridiculous policies, and you lost. This is Jim Hightower saying, far from accepting such twaddle from these GOP fabulists, it's time for Obama and the Democrats in Congress to go to the people who elected them, mobilizing this great grassroots majority to push passage of a bold progressive agenda of percolate up economic prosperity.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's going to pay.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, you look at this NLRB thing, and, you know, the right has just been foaming at the mouth over this. Because it is one of the last places that workers actually can get a fair shake. And there are, you know, there are people who say, you know, maybe we need to do away with that for a while. Maybe we need to go back and have those battles again. Because if you go back and you read American labor history, some of the bloodiest battles you have seen in the world. You look at Wisconsin. What sparked that whole occupation in February was the governor of Wisconsin saying, "I'm going to call out the National Guard." And the people who've had just a touch of labor education. Just a touch. They know that when a governor says, "I'm calling out the National Guard against workers," that does not end well. History has shown a lot of bloodshed. And they took to the streets. And rightfully so. Maybe we've got to fight those battles again. And like last night when I talked about the Teddy Roosevelt quote. Learn those battles all over again. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
All right, buddy, just trying to hang in there. Yeah, those battles got to be fought again. We've let them creep back in the door, and they're stomping us in the ground. And my only question has been is, what's it going to take and how long is it going to take? And I can't believe it's gotten all the way to the point where it is now.
Well, a good number of people, 85%, if you will, 80-85% of the people still have things to lose. You go back to the Great Depression where, people were basically starving in the streets. That's what saw the big wave of organizing. Maybe we need to feel that kind of pain. You go back to the old saying, sometimes your stomach's got to be empty before your head gets right.
Having sat on unemployment for 99 weeks.
But you're from South Carolina. I mean, Boeing created all kinds of jobs down there. Didn't you get a job at Boeing? I hear there's thousands of them.
Yeah, that's the kicker. I'm only 4 miles away from the plant. I created jobs, but the selection process was rigorous, and they actually put a lot of the workers through. They made them go through I don't know how many weeks of training with the tech school, which, as far as I know, I don't know that was paid for training. I believe that came. There was some arrangement made where they paid part of it, and the people that went to school paid part of it. But it's just convoluted. I mean, face it, man. They don't make it easy for anybody to get a job these days. And let me give you an example. In the construction trades now, they abuse the 1099 subcontractor rule to the point that if you do get a job, they want to pay you cash. And then they file a 1099 on you as though you're a subcontractor, which is highly illegal. But it's been done that way for a long time. That's how they used all the illegal Latino labor that they've gotten accustomed to. If they don't do that, then in other jobs they go, well, you know, we don't hire anybody directly, so, you know, you need to go file through this temporary service. So this temporary service can screen out the unwanted that we don't want, shield us from legal liability, give us a tax write-off on the expense, and oh, by the way, they're going to take a couple of bucks out of your pocket every hour that you work to pay for the privilege of having the job in the first place.
Welcome to America.
And then if they don't, and then if they don't do that, then they go, well, you know, you need to go onto our website and you need to submit your resume and data, 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 when there's a lot of people that don't have computers, or if they do have computers, can't afford the cable hookup, or down on their luck to the point that they don't have any way to use a computer. Unless you want to go to the library and try to jockey around 1 hour at a time and you get a max of 2 hours every day to be able to use a computer in the first place. You know, I mean, they just put so many impediments up. And then on top of that, I mean, you know, I cruise Craigslist. That's what I'm using, trying to find work. And I actually saw the other day that they wanted somebody to help out in their yard for a couple of days or like a week or whatever it was. And they were basically going to run a background check on you, you know, and I'm sitting here going, okay, well, what's next? You know, am I going to have to pee in a cup to dig a ditch?
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's just one thing after another, and they've made it more complicated than what it should be in, you know, in the first place. And, oh, by the way, if you were sitting in church and you broke wind when you were 9 years old, by the way, we don't want you because you're not the type of person we're looking for.
Well, I mean, this is how things have gotten.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. And you bring up, by the way, you bring up Florida and you bring up the unions and et cetera. You know, my sister's down there. She's three years away from retirement. She spent her lifetime as a special ed teacher and she's just holding her breath. But for the last 3 years that she's there in that job, she will not get a raise at all. That's something that the legislature passed.
Right.
And she's holding her breath because with the kind of money that she makes, she's topped out evidently. So that makes her a target, you know, and of course the non-union, you know, screw the worker, attitude of the Republicans, particularly of that, criminal that they've got for a governor, you know, if they get a chance, they'll dump her.
Oh, of course they will. And that's the move across the country to get rid of all of the qualified teachers, especially the older ones, because after all, they cost money because they're old. And let them get their own health care somewhere else. And hey, we can get some 20-year-old to come in and do the job for pennies.
Well, you know, I've seen all the tricks. I went to labor school and I've seen a lot of tricks companies pull, you know, all the way down to, companies once the union contract is up and they don't want to go through the negotiations or the unions make demands on them. I've seen them actually transfer ownership and just sell the company.
Yep, we're locked out.
Yeah, basically just do it as a piece of, you know, it's just a paperwork finazzle, razzle-dazzle. It's nothing, it's not even a real sale. But they do it, and as long as they change ownership on the paperwork, then it all goes back to null and void, which, you know, I look at American Airlines, and I really feel sorry for those folks, because I know what they're fixing to get hit with.
No, they're going
to
get screwed. Their pension's going to evaporate.
But listen, in closing, you know, as dismal as it gets, you know, we've got a little movement here. We've had 10 of our people got arrested in Marion Square in Charleston, Occupy Charleston. They went to court this morning. And, you know, it's not an easy road to hoe. And yeah, it's tough. But I got to tell you, with the news that continues to come out, particularly with this thing with the Fed and the $8 trillion they handed out,
yep,
and how they hand it out for the big wigs, but they don't help anybody else down here on the bottom. You know, there's a boiling going on below the surface here, and I've got a feeling that this is what I've been waiting to see for the last 20 years. And I've got my fingers in it, and anybody else out there listening, keep your fingers in it, too. And if you're not in it, you need to get involved in it because, you know, the numbers don't lie, and these people need to be brought down a couple of pegs.
I'm right there with you, brother. Amen. I appreciate the call. Always great talking to you.
No, have a good night, buddy.
Thanks so much. No, you're absolutely right. It's what I think a lot of people have waited for. This is finally the awakening of working people. And I've often questioned why, especially in the construction industry, you know, why people put up with it. You know, why do you put up with the independent contractor status? Why do you put up with the third-party logistic company? Why do we put up with it? Basically, because we don't have that mentality anymore that my grandfather's generation had. That idea that we are all in this together and collectively We can make change. Gonna take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Earth, sky.
Many scientists have been projecting a global sea level rise of up to half a meter by the year 2100.
But sea level may be rising faster than that, according to geologist Bill Hay at the University of Colorado. His work suggests that Earth's seas are rising at the maximum rate projected by scientists, or faster.
Hay said the existing models for sea level rise don't take into account feedback mechanisms. For example, Arctic sea ice is melting, but that ice is already floating in the ocean. So that doesn't, by itself, raise sea level. But a darker surface absorbs more sunlight. The more open water there is, the more heat is trapped in Arctic waters, and the warmer things can get. That warmth causes ice from nearby landmasses, including Greenland and Canada, to melt into the sea.
Or consider groundwater. Hay said it's being used, he actually used the word mined, faster than it would be otherwise to help mitigate droughts brought on by warming temperatures. That groundwater, too, ultimately goes into the oceans.
Hay said Earth's climate seems to have certain stable states. Between those states, things are unstable and can change quickly. We appear to be in a less stable state now. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for the words sea level rise. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Sends the investor class diving with their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence. Your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, just want to vent. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or you can give us a call here, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I got an email during the break. A guy sent me this. He doesn't know where it comes from, but it's a great quote. I like it. It says, give a man a gun and he'll rob. He can rob a bank. Give a man a bank and he can rob the world. And, you know, you go, Isn't that exactly what happened in September of 2008, where we basically just handed over the keys to the kingdom, telling these bankers, oh, please, please don't crash the economy. And you look at what Bloomberg News has come out with. And you go, really? You know, why aren't people doing the perp walk? Why is no one going to jail? Former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, who was at the helm, he had his hands on the levers. He knew what was going on back in 2008 when the financial crisis hit. Evidently, he leaked inside information regarding the government's takeover of Freddie and Fannie to a couple of his hedge fund buddies, one of his former buddies over there at Goldman Sachs. Now, they're saying that there's no evidence that the traders used the information. But they're saying as tracking firm-specific short stock sales isn't possible using public documents. But at least one trader contacted a lawyer and was told that Paulson's talk was material non-public information and he should stop trading immediately, should stop the trading of Freddie and Fannie. And as Reuters' Felix Selman put it, Paulson was given inside tips to Wall Street in general and to Goldman types in particular, exactly the kind of behavior that government Sachs conspiracy theorists have been speculating about for years. And, you know, look, it's been a swinging door with the Goldman people going in, taking over those jobs in the department. And at some point, I think we have to break that swinging door. You've got to attract and keep good people. But if they leave to go to Wall Street, they don't come back. Sorry, not happening. Once you leave, there's no swinging door. Because you look at what's going on over the last several years. I mean, we have bailed out the banks. We have, you know, I've said it before. We don't have any more bank robbers. You know, every once in a while, you'll see a silly story of some idiot who walks into a bank and misspells a robbery note or fills out an application before he robs the bank. And he gets caught, and he's going to do years for doing something dumb. But, you know, all of our colorful people, they became CEOs. There's no more Pretty Boy Floyd. There's no more Bonnie and Clyde. They're all CEOs now. They robbed the bank by pulling the truck up to the back door. And by saying, oh, we're going to crash your economy if you don't give us the money. That's the holdup. That's the heist. That's the robbery. That's the theft right there. The other theft? Look at those Bush tax cuts, man. The handouts that the Bush administration gave out. Jeez, oh, man. And then Obama allowed himself to be held hostage last November. Remember that? The lame deck session right after the 2010 election, just to get a little bit of unemployment for people who needed it, people like Ike who needed it. The Republicans were willing to let folks go the winter months starving. Why? Got to make sure that those tax cuts, those handouts for the millionaires and billionaires, got to make sure that those are right and just for them. And if you go back and you look at the numbers, the numbers being what they are, if we just raised a little bit, and I think, you know, these two Nobel Prize winning economists, Peter Diamond and Emmanuel Saez, according to their research, they're saying that the top marginal tax rate, which is now 35%, should actually be double that, should be 70%. And if we did that, you could actually move GDP by a significant amount. And you could use that additional money to help people at the bottom of the scale, bring them up, add the consumption, and have an economy that's moving. They said, you know, even if you can't get to that 70%, which is impossible, understand, it's going to be absolutely impossible. I think you would have a better chance of bringing Keith Moon and John Entwistle back to play a live concert with The Who. Never going to happen. But if you didn't raise it up, according to their research, to at least 43.5%, you could raise GDP, you could raise revenue by 3 percentage points of GDP, which would A, help you with your budget deficits, and B, still give the very wealthy twice as much as they had in 1970. But we know it's not going to happen. And you look at the Bush handouts. That one percenter, that person right there at the top, that one percenter, in 2011, they're going to get a tax break larger than what the 99% of this country earned in the entire year. So their tax handout, $66,384, going to be vastly more than the earnings of the 99%, which averaged $58,000. Explain to me again how that's good for the economy. You look at the news today, American Airlines filing bankruptcy. Whole bunch of reasons why. Number of people flying down, price of fuel through the roof. But what's going to happen here, and you know it's going to happen, and you got to imagine that the workers here are going to have to know it because their pension fund is $10 billion short. And you know that the bankruptcy judge is going to set that all aside, as they have done numerous times, and it's going to be on the backs of the taxpayers. These people are going to end up on the backs of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And you've got, I guess American Airlines has four traditional pension plans. They cover some 130,000 workers and retirees. Now, these workers, these retirees, these folks, they could lose almost immediately as much as $1 billion in benefits. That is a huge amount of money. That's a huge wealth transfer. And that's really what this bankruptcy stuff is all about. It's a wealth transfer. Those were wages that were foregone in the hopes that, you know what, I'm going to have a decent retirement. Which is another reason why I'm against companies holding your pension plans, which is why I've always been in favor of a national pension system that we all pay into. But again, there's something else never going to happen, because of course you're going to have people who are going to underfund it, and that's part of my problem with national health insurance. My worry is that you get what may be coming in the future: a Republican president, Republican governor, Republican Senate and House. And you end up seeing them starve the programs, as they've done. I mean, the NLRB is a perfect example of them starving the beast. The EPA, the FDA, you go down the list of all of the agencies that they have starved. And that's the game plan. But this American Airlines bankruptcy, to me, is huge news. I mean, this is going to be the largest default of a pension plan in the history of the country. And again, what it is, you know, all those people now, what, 30-40% of what they were supposed to get, they're going to end up with, and you and I, the taxpayer, are going to end up paying for. Because these companies were allowed to underfund, these companies were allowed to play shenanigans, and, you know, the CEO, he got paid pretty well up until he resigned. We really, really need to start looking at how business is done in this country. And I go back to what Teddy Roosevelt said, what I read yesterday. We need to be regulating these companies heavily, because they're a construct of we the people. We, through our government, allow them to exist for the good of us. Not for their own existence, but for the good of the nation. I know. They give us jobs. No, they don't give us anything. We work for that. I'm so sick and tired of hearing the right saying, well, you know, the job creators give jobs away. They don't give anything away. You work for those. You make them profit. If you didn't make them profit, you wouldn't have a job. And we need to start thinking in that frame again and stop with this, oh, we need to kowtow to the huge corporate special interest. Enough already. Gonna take a quick break, right back after this.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
You're listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Mediation will begin Tuesday at Hostess Brands in an effort to save more than 18,000 jobs. U.S. Bankruptcy Judge Robert Drain Monday urged the mediation effort as Hostess went to court seeking permission to liquidate the company. The hearing was adjourned until Wednesday to give the unions and the company a chance to meet privately under mediation. As Hostess Brands went to bankruptcy court Monday to secure the legal green light for liquidation, unions representing Hostess workers filed objections. In its opposition document, the Bakery Workers Union, BCTGM, said Hostess failed not because of union workers, but because its six management teams over the last 8 years were unable to make it a profitable, successful business enterprise. The bakery workers say despite commitments from the company that resources derived from worker concessions would be plowed back into the company, those investments never materialized. Instead, the union says, quote, helpless Hostess employees watched as money that was supposed to go towards capital investment, product development, plant improvement, and new equipment went to executive bonuses and payouts to the hedge funds that own Hostess Brands, end quote. The bakery workers say the company illegally withdrew from all Taft-Hartley pension plans, netting the company at least $50 million. Then the CEO was given a 300% raise, and nine other top executives got raises of 35 to 80%. The union said that Bain Capital-like private equity funds then came in to squeeze profits from Hostess for their multimillionaire investors. Strike action at the Port of Oakland continues. Jesse Russell reports.
Port of Oakland workers, represented by the Service Employees International Union Local 1021, are in the middle of a two-day strike. The strike started Monday morning with the workers attempting to highlight unfair labor practices by management. According to the union, executives at the port have illegally withheld vital information related to bargaining and have unilaterally changed the terms of the contract. Executives of the Port of Oakland have been facing a great deal of criticism for reports of misuse of funds. Most recently, Port of Oakland Executive Director Omar Benjamin resigned from his post when it was discovered he submitted an expense of more than $4,500 for a business meeting held at a strip club. Even with the news of wasted funds, but also a $37 million surplus, the port has been seeking a 15% wage and benefit cut on the back of the workers. The strike continues today.
Informational pickets are underway at airports across the country as flight attendants at Spirit Airlines press for a fair contract and prepare to strike if necessary. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says 5 years of negotiations have failed to reach a contract at Spirit Airlines. The union earlier this year asked the National Mediation Board for arbitration, which could lead to a 30-day cooling-off period and a strike deadline. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
For and by We the Working People, The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Something on your mind, question, comment. You look at the big story today, Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer hired as the Ohio State University football coach. Again, you know, you look at this and the money that they spent, an absolute obnoxious amount of money to get this guy to come out of retirement. A $4 million contract. A $4 million base salary. That's the base salary. Now, think about it. To be in the top 1%, you need to make $2 million a year. This guy is doubling that. A football coach. Come on now. He is now in the top 1% of the nation. $4 million base salary per year. Bonuses up to $700,000 a year. And lump sum payments in the years 2014, 2016, 2018 could be over 6 years worth at least $26.65 million a year. That's not even including the money that they spend on his automobile stipend, his country club, golf club membership, 50 hours of private jet use. And, of course, 12 tickets to each home game, which I guess he could, you know, out in the parking lot before the game, scalping those. You know, because, you know, he needs a little extra cheese on his Whopper. You know, $26.6 million, you know, may not go as far as as some people may think. You may get out there and hawk the money. And you know, you look at this, and the president of the university makes $1.3 million, which I think is outrageous as well. But you've got the football coach making $4 million in base salaries with all of these bonuses. I got to tell you, there's something seriously, seriously wrong. This has turned into you know, just massive industry. And you look at Ohio. You look at the money that they're gutting from public education. You look at the fact that they're pushing for vouchers and they're pushing for privatization. And I guess Kasich gutted books close to $1 billion. You look here in Pennsylvania, Governor corporate here, almost $900 million gutted from public education. And you go, $4 million for a football coach? Really? Is that our priority? Is that the direction we want to go in this nation? Oh, I sure as hell hope not. But I got this big business. And if you look at the analysis by the USA Today, they found that the average salary for a major college head football coach jumped nearly, this is just mind-blowing, 55% over the last 6 years. They're paying almost $1.5 million a year for a football coach. The guy from Texas, over $5 million a year. He's the highest paid guy. I'm going, really? Is that the priority? And I guess in Texas, I understand it. I understand because, you know, that's supposedly all they've got there, and along with oil. But, you know, $5 million, I guess. They don't care about education. You look at the numbers, they're near the bottom. But Ohio, man, what have you done? And, you know, you go back and you look at Meyer, who was, I guess, a graduate assistant at Ohio State back in the 80s. And the guy who hired him, the coach who hired Earl Bruce, he earned $87,000 a year. Now, to me, that sounds more reasonable. You know, back in the 80s, $87,000, yeah, it brought in a good sum. Brought in a nice chunk of change. I'm sorry, I'm just not getting $4 million at a time when we're talking about gutting payments for education. And here in Pennsylvania, talking about privatizing it. And I don't know if you saw this story, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported today that the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh, they evidently, one of the principals were told that they should tell all the parents in the district that they should be lobbying their state legislators. Because, you know, you got to pass this bill. This email went out that said we must be relentless in our efforts to help pass school choice this year. He says, I'm asking you to inform parents that have received tuition assistance that they must contact their legislators and return the contract form attached with the date they contacted them and the decision that they've got, or they're not going to get grant money next year. Now, the diocese is running away from this. But, you know, all the folks who may be getting a buck or two from the church to be able to send their kids to the Catholic school, getting their arms twisted, that's what it's come down to. And people wonder, why hasn't the Catholic Church come out against privatizing the wine and spirit shops? Why haven't we heard a peep from the folks of the religious community about that? I said from the beginning, and you go back, you listen to the tapes months ago, I bet there's a deal there. We'll get you the vouchers. You shut up about the wine and spirits shops. We can privatize the whole thing, and the profiteers will just walk off with the assets of this state. Now the diocese is saying, well, you know, it was a motivational thing. You know, he just maybe went a little bit too far. A little bit too far. Had they not gotten caught, you know, and it still may be going that direction, where not what you've got is you've got a scenario where these parents they're in the bind. They're the folks who are going to be pushed and pulled. And why? Lots of tax money. And this voucher thing, huge money. I mean, it's amazing to me. There's all of this money out there to tell us why we need vouchers. There's all this money out there to to pimp privatization. There's all this money out there for K-12.org and cyber this and charter that, but there doesn't seem to be enough money to fix what problems it is that we may be having in the public system. Because it's not about saving public education. It's about destroying it. It's about tearing it apart, and it's about profiting from education. And then it'll be like it used to be, where we can deny those who don't have the money. So those poor people who are being their arms twisted to lobby their legislators now, those are going to be the ones standing on the sidelines. Mark my words. It's going to happen. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. Stick around. We're right back after this. You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Homeowners, cold weather is almost upon us. Use the equity in your house to keep warm and toasty all winter long. Save your energy with new windows and keep the outside out and the inside in. Or roll out a new carpet for those holiday guests. Stop sending money out the door and get it on the house with a home equity line of credit from PSECU. You can borrow up to 80% of your home's value at just a 3.25 annual percentage rate with a PSECU home equity line of credit. Other rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/HELOC.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Let's see. Obama won both the popular vote and the Electoral College tally. Democrats didn't just add to their Senate majority, but added such feisty progressive new senators as Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, and Mazie Hirono. Even in the House, Dems won the national vote and gained 7 seats. Plus, progressives scored victories coast to coast on ballot initiatives. Wow, the only conclusion you can draw is that the Republican Party now has a mandate to set the policy agenda for the next 4 years. Huh? Astonishingly, that's the conclusion of the GOP's congressional leaders. I guess we should have expected as much from a party so deeply mired in delusion that its chief political guru, Karl Rove, kept hotly insisting on election night that Mitt Romney had won, even though he clearly lost. Later, it was surreal to hear Republican House Leader John Boehner declare, "We'll have as much of a mandate as Obama will." Then, going from surreal to insane, the GOP's Senate sourpuss Mitch McConnell proclaimed, "Now it's time for the president to propose solutions that actually have a chance of passing the Republican-controlled House." Memo to Mitch and Boehner. America just had a year-long nationwide debate on whether to keep pampering Wall Street hucksters and tax dodgers, privatize Medicare and Social Security, continue whacking the country's social safety net, maintain fat subsidies for big oil, repeal Obamacare and other aspects of your coke-headed, tinkle-down, ridiculous policies, and you lost. This is Jim Hightower saying, far from accepting such twaddle from these GOP fabulous, it's time for Obama and the Democrats in Congress to go to the people who elected them, mobilizing this great grassroots majority to push passage of a bold progressive agenda of percolate-up economic prosperity.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
In Wisconsin, they're standing in the snow, wondering where the work is gonna go. In Wisconsin. Wisconsin in the middle of the night. Governor Walker, legislator, will get right.
Yeah, like Thieves in the Night. And we were actually in the building when the theft happened. I remember it. And I think it's one of those things I'll remember to the day I die, the energy that was in that room. It looked like 1,000 people in one big group hug, mourning the loss of their rights. But they're fighting back now. And we just saw a tweet from Essensky who says, holy cow, Ashland and Bayfield County set a goal of 3,500 signatures as of an hour ago. They're at 2,900. And yesterday we talked about the fact that they have over 300,000 signatures on this recall petition. And this Wisconsin Republican Party, they kind of make me chuckle, saying that the recall effort was a baseless power grab, you know, by those evil liberals. And it was somehow generating false momentum. Yeah, I mean, 300,000 people saying we want you out. Somehow that's false momentum. Anyway, I've got Mark Anderson on the phone. He's one of the folks who does some great writing over at Daily Kos Labor. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And, I just want to say, you know, the Republicans also seem to think that all of us are out of state.
Yeah, well.
They don't think any of us actually live here that are against Walker.
Yeah, well, no one that matters lives in the state, according to them. But I love this response by the Republican Party of Wisconsin, that it's all false momentum, and it's a baseless power grab. You got to give them credit for staying on message, at least.
You know, I think the thing is that they are so afraid right now, they don't know what to say. I don't know if you've had the chance to see any of the pro-Walker commercials on YouTube that have been airing on TV here endlessly.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the one with the lieutenant governor.
Oh.
because that is just priceless. Because if what she's saying is accurate, that your signature is worth 25,666 Bart Starr signatures, can I have your autograph?
Well, you know, I don't think it actually is. I don't think her math is right. I think she went to some charter school somewhere. because by my math, I think it came up to $1.27.
Oh, see, now she was saying it was like $300, right?
Yeah.
Because the football that she held, because, you know, you got to play to the 80 doofus base. She said that was $300, and she's saying your signature is 25,666 times more valuable than that $300 signature of Bart Starr's.
Well, you know, one thing she forgets is most of the people that she's talking to can't afford $300 for Bart Starr football.
A good point. I mean, it kind of shows how out of touch she is with just the average working people of your state.
Yeah, I mean, I have a Brett Favre football. It's going cheap these days, though.
do you have the... Well, I'm not going there with the twins. No, not going there.
Yeah. But, you know, they are out of touch. They seem to think that we're all, you know, that everybody's from out of state, that we're all these big union bosses. And I still haven't figured out what a big union boss is. Because everybody that I know that is in a union is here locally.
Right.
And, you know, I know the VP of the local asked me, you know, he's not a big union boss, you know.
Well, the picture, they want to paint this caricature, and then they want to build up this big story, like they did with the welfare queen.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the big union boss is with the welfare queen and the small family farmer who lost his farm because of the estate tax, and they're driving around in their Cadillac somewhere. Nobody can find them.
I've never seen them. You know, I've never seen these people that they claim are against it. You know, I keep thinking, you know, I've actually got a diary that's going to be published at some point here, I don't know when, where I'm saying I really want my state back. Because if you've ever been to Wisconsin, you think, you know, when you leave, you think of red barns, cornfields, cheese curds, and beer.
Yep.
And, you know, and Aaron Rodgers. That's what you think about when you leave here.
Actually, when I left, I was thinking about bratwurst and beer.
Well, you know, brats. It's the wrong time of year for those right now, but no, yeah, brats. And right now, what everybody thinks of is we got all these insane Republicans in office, and I just kind of want my state back. But in that post that's going to be going up, there's a photo of a teacher that I took up on the Capitol Square in March, and I quite plainly put in there, this is not an out-of-state union thug. This is a Wisconsin school teacher. These are the people that are trying to get their rights back. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I, you know, yesterday my son had an asthma attack. I had to call an ambulance. I had union firefighters come to my house to take him to the hospital. I had union nurses working on him. I felt much like I was in much better hands with them than I would have been with non-union. Yeah. And Walker's trying to take that away from us. And it's frustrating to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only Wisconsin. I mean, you know, and it's all across the country. It's, you know, here in Pennsylvania, they're talking about doing the exact same things.
Yeah.
And I've been saying for the longest time that Wisconsin is really the front lines of the battle of the class war where it's going on right now.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's looking at this that's going, maybe the radicals are going to maybe pull back a little bit and let them fall on the sword. Because, you know, we talked to a guy who said that the elections could run in the $70 million range. And I don't know that they're going to want to spend that kind of money. I think they just may let Walker and them go.
You know, I'm afraid they're going to spend that much. I just saw a post from one of the organizers for Recall, his organization is Recall Wisconsin, I think. There's several organizations that have very similar names. I think that's the one he's with.
Right.
And the post he put up was about how the Tea Party is going to start fundraising in the battleground state of Wisconsin. Personally, I think they're a little late because it's been a battleground since February. But it's a sign that they're viewing this, that if they lose here, they know they're going to start losing elsewhere. You know, they already lost Ohio.
And big. When we were in Columbus, it was overwhelming and it was massive. And the people that we got to talk to while we were in Columbus, got it. And these weren't even union members. These are people who said they've just gone too far.
Yeah.
And if you look at what's gone on in Wisconsin, I don't know very many people in your state, and I've met a lot of great people there. We had a great 9 days there. They said the same thing. It's just too much. It's too far.
It is. What's funny is when you bring that up, that you talk to people and they say that it's gone too far. Last year on my way home, it used to infuriate me because I had to go through this one intersection every day at the corner of Whitney and Raymond Road. And there's a big 4x8 sheet of plywood, you know, Walker for governor. And it used to just irritate me to no end to see that sign every day. And he had it up for 3 weeks after the election. It's just rubbing it in.
Yeah.
So I drive past there today. That same sheet of plywood's out there, painted bright red. Big white letters, Recall Walker.
Beautiful.
Well, I mean, he's lost somebody that has had a recall, has had a Walker sign up, a McCain sign up, a Bush sign up. He's lost the state.
And you know, there's part of me that says you need those people to go back and get involved in their party and take their party back away from the radicals.
Yep.
Take it away from the extremists and move back to a rational, sane position. Because there are some... there are some things that Republicans stand for that I can agree with.
Mm-hmm.
This stealing rights away from workers, this radical agenda, this pro-business at all costs. I'm sorry, we've seen this movie before, and it doesn't end well for people like me.
No, it doesn't end well for anybody. You know, and another point is the company my ex-wife works for, they made the news today. The state of Wisconsin gave them $4 million to make sure they kept their headquarters here. I don't understand why we are allowing companies to bribe or, you know, basically hold states hostage. Why are we giving, you know, multi-million dollar businesses, and this is a multi-million dollar worldwide business, why are we giving them $4 million? I can think of a lot better uses for $4 million than to keep rail back here in town.
Well, I mean, again, it goes back to this this beggar thy neighbor economic development that we've allowed ourselves to fall into.
Yeah.
You know, here in our area, there was a company that was in the neighborhood 93 years, Carlisle Tire and Wheel. They were lured away by the folks in Tennessee, got something like $34 million to move. And they were happy to go. And you know, someone else shook us down. And really what it is it's a shakedown.
It is. You know, and I look back, I mean, during World War II, my mom was a Rosie the Riveter at the Rayovac battery plant. And they'd been here that long.
Wow.
And now they're they're threatening to leave if they don't get $4 million. It's things like that that I think, you know, show Walker's out of touch, along with some of his other ads. I mean, the Queefish one was way out there. He's currently running one now where he's got a supposed school teacher talking about how great his cuts are for her school district. The problem is she is a charter school teacher and does not work for an actual school district.
Nice.
And The other ad that he has running, he has a school board member talking about how great the cuts have been for her district. She didn't get elected to the school board until after he made these cuts. So she has no idea what has actually been cut.
Well, again, you know what she's been told. I mean, it's one of those things. You put her into that position to carry the water.
Yeah. And another school district today just announced that they're closing two grade schools because they can't afford to keep them open anymore.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that I'm sure they've done some major upgrades over the last couple of years.
I'm going to say they probably haven't.
Oh, okay, because, you know, I know here in the Harrisburg area, they were forced to do some major upgrades. They were forced to close these schools, and I'm betting my bottom dollar that the charter schools are going to come in, and they're going to have a nice well-built school to be able to destroy what's left of the public system in this state.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, another thing that I kind of have to chuckle about is I used to live up in Columbia County, which is very Republican area of the state. I mean, I remember when I lived up there, I think I had the only carry sign up in my front lawn in the entire city to tell you how red it was.
Right.
They had a goal of getting, I think, around 9,600 signatures. As of yesterday, they had exceeded that. They were up to, I think, 10,000, 10,500.
Wow.
And that's in a red county.
So the momentum is moving in that direction because, you know, I was going to ask you, you know, in your experience, what are you seeing? Because we're seeing these huge eye-popping numbers just in 12 days. You're looking at 300,000 people saying, you know what, we want this guy gone. That is just, to me, it's remarkable.
It is. I mean, even here in Madison, where you'd think everybody who's wanted to sign a petition has signed one already. I mean, we had a big Walker rally up on the square 2 weeks ago. Or not a Walker rally, an anti-Walker rally a couple weeks ago. And, you know, we had 30,000, 40,000 people up there.
Wow.
Had one guy supporting Walker, and I got stuck behind him the whole time. So, you know, last night as we're coming home from the pharmacy with my son's medication, there's a truck with a big recall Walker sign on it, sign your petition here, and there are people pulling over to sign that petition. And like I said, you'd think everybody who's going to sign it here in town has already signed it.
Right. Yeah, you would think you got to it early. But, you know, one of the things from the statement from the Republicans in Wisconsin that I found kind of comical is they said that, you know, they remain focused on Governor Walker's common sense reforms. And I got to question that. In the state of Wisconsin, is what he has done, is that common sense? I mean, do the average everyday people go, yeah, I get that?
No. No, the only people who agree with him are the ones that are so far to the right that they probably are starting to make Ron Paul look like he's a liberal.
Wow.
I mean, I've got a couple of friends that fall into, well, they're not going to be friends long if they keep it up, but I've got a couple of friends that fall into that category, and they think he's done no wrong. They think that this recall is just, well, you lost, that's the only reason you're doing it. It has nothing to do with that we lost. Had we lost, and if he were a good governor, I would support him.
Right.
It's just kind of like I don't understand, you know, with the way that these conservatives are with President Obama. I've always learned, you know, all my life, if you support who's in charge. You know, you can complain about him, but you support him because you don't want your nation to fail. I don't want my state to fail. I want Walker to do a good job. The problem is he has done a poor job, and he has gone against public opinion. And he has done some very harmful things to this state. Right now, Wisconsin is at the bottom when it comes to job creation in the Midwest.
I think I saw 43rd in the nation.
Yeah.
Was what I saw. And I was going to ask you about that. You know, you look at November of 2010, everyone's platform was jobs, jobs, jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It seems they've forgotten how to spell that word or even what it is.
The job session that we had about a month ago, it was all right-wing agenda stuff. There was not a single jobs bill passed. The local media actually said there were three jobs bills passed, but I've talked to Representative Pocan, I've talked to Representative Mason, and they're like, those were not jobs bills. They did nothing to create jobs in the state. We had a bill that rolled back an actual sex education program that would work to replace it with abstinence-only education.
Well, that's a jobs bill.
That's going to create jobs.
It's going to, because we're going to have more maternity care. We're going to need more nurses at the hospital to deliver the babies, more doctors, because we're going to have more children. It's going to be more daycare centers, more formula, lots
more
of things.
More mouths to feed, more welfare, more badger care, more Medicaid.
Well, they've done away with all that, so you people are on your own. You're the ones who, they care about kids until they pop them out.
Yeah, but that's what they've done. I think another one of the bills was they defined what a bicycle was.
I don't even know where to go with that.
You
define what a bicycle? I'm sorry, a bicycle?
You can't make this stuff up. I mean, I'm a writer. I can't make this stuff up. They have brought in a deer czar from Texas who said it's time to move on from John Muir. And I don't know, how much people know about John Muir out in Pennsylvania, but he's a pretty big guy here. And his conservation practices have been used across the country. And we get this guy who says it's time to move on from him?
Yeah, move on. You just kill all the deer off the first year, and then you make all that money up front, and they don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, well they did remove a program that the hunters hated, but it was successful in thinning out the deer herd. And you don't have as many car deer accidents anymore, but the guys weren't getting the big bucks. So they got rid of the earn a buck program, which was you had to shoot a doe first.
Interesting. Well, again, another jobs plan.
I'm not sure what kind of job that's going to create. But you go through this list of bills, and there's not a single one of them that's going to create a job. Not a single one. I mean, I could go on and on and on with these bills.
Yeah, and again, we can do the same thing here in Pennsylvania. There hasn't been a jobs plan. It's the same old stuff, repackaged and given different names. Last question I've got for you, in looking at this, over 300,000 people, probably going to get the 540,000, I think.
Oh, I have no doubt of that. And honestly, I don't think he can win.
What happens if they recall him, but she stays in office? She becomes governor, right?
No, she stays lieutenant governor.
Okay.
The governor gets replaced. We would have a Democratic governor and a Republican whack job as our lieutenant governor. And she is a whack job. You have ever heard her talk.
I have. I watched her videos. Beautiful.
Oh, that's nothing. Trust me. Look at some of her other ones.
I will most certainly do. Anyway, Mark Anderson, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the update on what's going on in Wisconsin. And we look forward to having you back again as this moves towards the finish line.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Mark. I appreciate it. Thank you. Mark Anderson, Daily Kos. Got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com. Let's see. Obama won both the popular vote and the Electoral College tally. Democrats didn't just add to their Senate majority, but added such feisty progressive new senators as Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, and Mazie Hirono. Even in the House, Dems won the national vote and gained 7 seats. Plus, progressives scored victories coast to coast on ballot initiatives.
Well, the only conclusion you can draw is that the Republican Party now has a mandate to set the policy agenda for the next 4 years. Huh? Astonishingly, that's the conclusion of the GOP's congressional leaders. I guess we should have expected as much from a party so deeply mired in delusion that its chief political guru, Karl Rove, kept hotly insisting on election night that Mitt Romney had won, even though he clearly lost. Later, it was surreal to hear Republican House Leader John Boehner declare, "We'll have as much of a mandate as Obama will." Then, going from surreal to insane, the GOP Senate sourpuss Mitch McConnell proclaimed, "Now it's time for the president to propose solutions that actually have a chance of passing the Republican-controlled House." Memo to Mitch and Boehner. America just had a year-long nationwide debate on whether to keep pampering Wall Street hucksters and tax dodgers, privatize Medicare and Social Security, continue whacking the country's social safety net, maintain fat subsidies for big oil, repeal Obamacare and other aspects of your coke-headed, tinkle-down, ridiculous policies, and you lost. This is Jim Hightower saying, far from accepting such twaddle from these GOP fabulous, it's time for Obama and the Democrats in Congress to go to the people who elected them, mobilizing this great grassroots majority to push passage of a bold progressive agenda of percolate-up economic prosperity.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.thehightower.com.
The Hightower sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can also email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm still hung up about the story I talked about last night. This state senator from Arizona coming out, this guy Steve Smith, saying that, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to build the fence. And I'm in favor of building stuff. I say, let's build the fence. At least put people back to work, create some jobs. Not going to do any good. You show me a 30-foot fence, I'll show you a 31-foot ladder or a hole underneath it. But let's build it. What the heck? But he's going to go out there and he wants donations, and he's collected about $255,000 in donations for their build defense project. Now, understand, just for supplies alone, it's going to cost about $34 million to build the fence that they want. Or about $426,000 a mile. He's got 255, so you know, a little over half a mile there. So he's on his way. But who's going to do the labor? You know, the supplies are $34 million. Who's going to do it? Well, they're going to hire prison labor. I mean, you know, you got to love it. Another way to put those prisoners, because we got a lot of them. Put them to work. And basically, screw you working people. Anyway, I've got Abe Amoros, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union, LIUNA, on the line. Abe, what do you think of the idea of using prison labor to build the fence, maybe put them to work building roads and bridges? Prison labor, great idea.
I think it's a terrible idea. With so many ham and eggers out of work today, people on the bench, and working families down on their luck, the last thing we ought to be doing is providing cheap labor. And, you know, these things have to be built by skilled craftsmen in the first place.
Oh, come on. We can do it with bubble gum and barbed wire.
You know, that's what the good people of Arizona want you to think. But there's just absolutely no reason why we ought to be doing things like this, especially
yep.
when there's so many Americans out of work today. And it's a question of fairness also to them. Tax dollars should be used to help taxpayers, obviously.
Absolutely.
And with unemployment being the way it is, and not just in Pennsylvania, but throughout the country, I cannot possibly imagine how this state senator could sleep at night thinking that he's saving taxpayer dollars. Because somebody has to supervise all of this construction. Somebody has to supervise the planning. Somebody has to supervise the construction of the fence itself, and it certainly isn't going to be prison guards that are doing this. It clearly, it's going to fall in the hands of contractors as well. So What you're also looking at is contractors making a very fat profit off of cheap labor, which is even more insidious given today's economy.
But, you know, I look at this and I go, this is the perfect Republican, this is the perfect GOP jobs bill.
That's right. That's exactly right. Keeping working families unemployed, keeping working families unable to sustain themselves, ensuring that that health care benefits are not paid, ensuring that pensions are not paid, and all in the sake of saving taxpayer dollars. You know, that's all they want to talk about. But what they're really doing is they're sticking it to the little guy once again. It's preposterous.
Yeah.
Because in the end, the ones that are getting fat are the contractors.
Yep.
And we continue to take from the bottom to pad the top.
I would I would argue they're not even interested in saving taxpayer dollars.
No,
it's about fattening the wallets of the you know, their campaign donors. But I look at the fact that they want to pay these prisoners 50 cents an hour, and there's part of me that says if they can make things desperate enough, if they can make conditions bad enough in this country, maybe your members and maybe workers who are not in prison, maybe they'll come close to 50 cents an hour. You listen to the Bachmans of the world, Michelle Bachmans of the world. They say if, you know, we just did away with that minimum wage, we could create millions of jobs.
That's right. This is just another blatant attack on working families and their wages. And anything to suppress wages, anything to suppress health care benefits, anything to suppress pensions, anything to suppress those who want to get ahead. It's really an attack on the American dream, Rick, because, I mean, you know, our kids are looking at a generation right now where they may not be better off than their parents were because of these crazy policies that are being put in place and these Republicans using these sound bites talking about saving taxpayer dollars, but they're not saving taxpayer dollars. And we see that in Pennsylvania as well with the current affairs that are taking place up on Capitol Hill. I mean, it's insanity. What they're doing is they're making their friends richer while the working class continues to be unemployed, underemployed in many instances, and, you know, they just keep hitting hard times over and over again. This vicious cycle has to stop.
Yeah, you know, but looking at this 50 cents an hour for prisoners, and again, it's about screwing workers as well.
Right.
We had a call earlier. I called in and said, hey, you know, down where we're at, they use these independent contractors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you a 1099. And again, it's part of this, you know, how do we screw the little guy? How do we make sure that, you know, we get that pound of flesh? And you know, he went through it. He said, look, you know, they pay you cash. They give you a 1099. They don't pay your workers' comp. They don't pay unemployment. They don't pay any of that stuff. And you're the worker, the guy at the bottom. You're the guy who end up getting screwed in all of this.
That's exactly right. And, you know, our workers have to be aware of this. I mean, this is a concerted effort against them. And what the Republicans are really good at is putting out sound bites that make it sound like they are for the little guy when they're not. They're taking away their wages. They're taking away their benefits. They're hurting their families. And in the end, a lot of our workers, unfortunately, are turning around and giving their votes to the Republicans blindly because of social issues. What we need to be focusing on are those economic issues. What are these people in office going to do to help us provide better for our families?
You know, I got an email from someone. Somebody sent me this article, and you know, it's a couple years old. It's the state of U.S. labor and building union power, and there, you know, a bunch of really great ideas in it, and a few very poignant observations. And one of the ones that caught my attention, Abe, was you know, it said that the decline in union density, union strength, one of the big problems is it's the decline in policy that help working people, where you start seeing now just what we've been seeing, an attack on workers' compensation, an attack on unemployment, an attack on minimum wage, and an attack on all of these things that used to help workers get a hand up. We're now seeing the big corporations and the billionaire class feeling emboldened that they can go after and take those things back.
Absolutely. And the elite, if you will, also have a lot more money to invest in public relations machines, in sound bites, in dropping quotes in news programs, in basically buying off an entire network, Fox News. I mean, they have so many resources behind them that could stir up trouble for us, and we need to be aware that this is taking place.
You know, and I look at these attacks on the NLRB. I look at, you know, just one attack after another. It's this massive onslaught,
right?
That, you know, average everyday working people, man, you're just getting by. I mean, most people aren't even living. They're just getting by, paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth. And they don't have time to fight this stuff.
Right, right. And those on the opposite side, Rick, they know that, that our resources are finite in terms of time, in terms of even, I mean, having the time to look at the news and really read what's really taking place. I mean, we're starting to die by 1,000 paper cuts here. I mean, they're coming at us in every which way, but up in Pennsylvania especially. I mean, we have a tax on prevailing wage. We have a tax on right-to-work legislation. I mean, the Republicans are salivating right now as to how they can really stick it to the little guy. And we need to be aware that this is coming down the pike. If it's not going to come down the pike in 2012, it's certainly coming in 2013. We really need to be aware that this is taking place. And 2012 will be an excellent year for us to really organize and really support candidates that, that care about working people. And, you know, they exist on both sides, mostly the Democratic Party, of course. But you still have those renegade Republicans who are out there for the little guy as well. And we need to be aware that, you know, this is a solution that that requires bipartisan efforts.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Abe Amoros, Legislative Director with the Laborers International Union, LIUNA. You know, as Legislative Director, you deal with what's going on here at in the Hill here in Harrisburg. And are you seeing the same kind of attacks that we're seeing around the country? Because, you know, I think we've gotten a little complacent maybe here in Pennsylvania that, you know, we're not Wisconsin, we're not Ohio, we're not Maine. You know, the attacks aren't on the front page. We're not seeing 100,000 people in the street. But I'm of the mindset that I'm thinking that the same attacks are coming, just a little bit undercover.
Absolutely, Rick. And there, these conversations, I could tell you with 100% certainly are taking place in the halls of Harrisburg. They're taking place back in the district offices. They're lining up against us. They're lining up against us quietly. They're lining up against us with deals that are taking place right now. The caucuses are talking to one another in terms of the Republican caucuses are talking to one another that is on how they are going to start suppressing our wages by tinkering with prevailing wage, by pushing right-to-work legislation, and they're doing it quietly because they've learned their lessons from Wisconsin, they've learned their lessons from Ohio, and what they don't want to do is embarrass themselves publicly. So they're starting to line up, and they're starting to take little bites here and there in taking prevailing wage language out of bills, for instance. There's a public-private partnership bill that is going to come out at the House of Representatives next week that stripped prevailing wage language from it. And, of course, we're going to try to get that language reinstated. But, I mean, that's just another example of how they're coming at us. And like you said, you don't see this in the headlines. You don't hear this stuff at the supermarket. You don't hear this this banter, you know, at work, because it's underground right now. They're gearing up. They're organizing. They're lining themselves up. And it's coming, and we don't have the luxury of being complacent in Pennsylvania. With unemployment slowly climbing from where it was earlier this year, we really need to be aware that a barrage of attacks on working people are going to continue, and they're going to start ramping this up in the next year, year and a half. And we really need to start organizing now and letting our elected officials know that we know this is taking place. It's unacceptable, and Pennsylvania still is a very strong labor state, and we need to take advantage of that. But we cannot take anything for granted, and we have to continue pushing and holding our elected feet to the fire, because this stuff is really serious.
Let me ask you, you know, union, non-union, I don't think it really matters. Looking at prevailing wage, I think is it going to, and I've heard the righties talk about we can save 30% on building projects if we just do away with prevailing wage and drop those wages down to the quote unquote, whatever the hell it means, the natural level. Can we save 30%? I mean,
no,
can we save
20? Absolutely not, Rick. They want you to believe that you're already spending 30% more on projects because of labor. You know, studies have shown that it's no more than 12% of total costs. And what are you getting with prevailing wage earning labor? You're getting skilled, craftsmen. You're talking about individuals who have a significant amount of training, who know what they're doing, who bring in projects under budget in many instances. And what you're doing is you're saving dollars in the long run because you're getting a quality project the very first time. You don't need to go back and replace it. You don't need to fix it in 5 or 10 years. You're going to have a solid quality project built by union hands who are receiving a fair wage, which is the prevailing wage. They always want to say we need to save taxpayer dollars on these public projects. School districts and municipalities are screaming about it. But at the end of the day, that's an inflated number because the taxpayer dollar fallacy is just that. Taxpayers are not going to experience any cost-cutting measures. The ones that are going to be pocketing the difference are going to be the contractors.
And we saw that in Ohio.
Exactly. This is what's taking place today in America. All this phony talk about saving taxpayer dollars, and it's going right into the pockets of the contractors. The only ones making money off of this taxpayer savings are going to be the contractors. It's not going to be passed on to the ham and eggers that are paying their tax bills at the end of the day.
And
it's going right to those who are padding at the top once again.
And what worries me, you end up with a transient construction trade. You end up with transient labor and shoddy work at the end of the road. And that's been borne out across the country.
That's right, Rick. You know what's taking place? These contractors want guys and gals to work for $10 an hour with no health benefits and no pensions regardless. And they want to mess around with the classifications. They want to pay people who have been trained and experienced in a certain craft a flat rate, just like anyone that can come in off the street untrained, unskilled, and unqualified.
So,
and that's completely unfair.
Last question I've got for you. You're not in favor of the 50-cent an hour prison labor.
Absolutely not.
The GOP grand jobs plan. Put those prisoners to work. Abe, always great to talk with you. I appreciate the time, brother.
You got it. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Covering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I gotta listen to man. Spitting on the palm of my hand. I'm almost as if you are the right man.
Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, interestingly enough, during the break, we must have lost the call, but asking about, you know, workers' comp and asking about, you know, how it, you know, especially looking at having prison labor, building the fence. You know, what happens if those people get injured on the job? What happens to them? And you look here in the state of Pennsylvania, what labor has done for years. And, you know, I go back to what someone emailed me, this article, which I think is a great article, the State of U.S. Labor and Building Union Power by Elaine Bernard, which I suggest taking a look at, you know, maybe Google her name, Elaine Bernard. But, you know, talking about the fact that as union density has declined and as membership has declined and people participating in democracy on the workplace, especially as we've been divided with these bizarre issues, these divisive wedge issues, what we've seen is attacks on all of the things that used to protect us on the job. Workers' comp being one of them. Understand, here in the state of Pennsylvania, there's a bill working its way through the legislature for workers' comp, pretty much stating that 95-96% of the people who get injured on the job will never have a choice in the doctor that they see. They want to move from a 90-day you have to see the company doctor to 180 days where you have to see the company doctor. Basically, I'm of the mindset here in Pennsylvania the compromise has been broken when it comes to workers' comp, but you're seeing these attacks because workers don't have that kind of power to fight back against it. Same thing with unemployment. You know, what do they want to do? They want to cut the amount because it's too generous. It makes people lazy and they're willing to sit home. What, 40% of my income? That's too generous? Really? But those are the attacks that happen when we don't take the time to organize around the workplace. And we don't, to me, kitchen table economics is the most important thing when it comes to politics. All of that personal divisive stuff, sorry, you're not going to distract me. The shiny thing rarely grabs my attention. It's how am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to make sure that the future generation has an opportunity that maybe I didn't have? How am I going to make sure that my grandparents have health care and can exist out of poverty? How do I make sure that when I retire, I don't live in poverty and there's health care for me? These are the things we need to be talking about, not the divisive things, not the, you know, who's sleeping with who, don't care, never have. Stuff we need to be looking into. And, you know, you look at the Republican job plan. And the reason I've brought up the Arizona thing a couple of times, the Republican jobs plan, prison labor. Their jobs plan, lower wages. Their jobs plan, poor working conditions. We've seen this movie. We have been there before. Go back and read the history of the 90s, the 1890s. Look at the conditions then. And, you know, I love talking to high school kids, you know, especially, you know, younger ones, seventh, eighth grade. And I like telling them, you know, 100 years ago, go back and find where you were 100 years ago, what someone your age would be doing in this economy 100 years ago. You know, here in this area, you probably would have been working up in the coal mines. And I tell the story about the, you know, the kids who opened and closed the doors down in the mines, 8, 9 years old, 7, 8, had a mortality rate of 50% because they were crushed by the door because they'd fall asleep after, you know, they're working 14 hours a day down there in the mines, opening and closing that door, and then fall asleep and they'd be crushed. Or if one of the workers were killed in the mines. The supervisor's job, one of the few jobs the supervisor had, was to pick up your broken, bloodied, beaten, lifeless corpse, throw it up on a coal cart, take it up to the surface, throw your bag of bones onto the back of a buggy and clip-clop to your house and throw your body at the door so that your broken, lifeless body would hit the door, and that's how they knocked on the door. And you know what? Now it's their problem. Company had no responsibility to you. There was no workman's compensation. There was none of that. You were on your own, brother. And that's what the radical right wing wants to take us back to. They want to take us back to the you're on your own again. And we've seen that in almost everything they've done. And they couch it in, oh, we just need to be a little more business friendly. We need people to create jobs. And what they've done a masterful job of doing is pitting regions against each other, pitting states against each other, pitting local communities against each other. Who's willing to work for less? Who's willing to work in worse conditions? Who's willing to put up with a whole plethora of negative outcomes just so you can have this job? Not only have they done it with nations, we're doing it with states. And we're threatening people, well, we'll move this job to China if you don't take that pay cut or if you organize that union. Understand, this is our country. We have the ability to set what happens here. We the people still, I think, mean something, which is why I do believe you're seeing so many people out in the streets, why you're seeing folks with the occupations going on all across this country. They've had enough. They've figured out what the future looks like. They saw the movie. And the ending for them sucked. It's that simple. And I hope, you know, by doing this program, by doing some of the other work we do, I hope people are becoming aware of what's going on. The attacks in Wisconsin and in Ohio and in Maine and Tennessee and states all across, and soon to be Indiana, states all across this country where you've got Republican governors and legislatures. That stuff's happening here. It's just happening in a little more quiet fashion. Right back after this.
With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Mediation will begin Tuesday at Hostess Brands in an effort to save more than 18,000 jobs. U.S. Bankruptcy Judge Robert Drain Monday urged the mediation effort as Hostess went to court seeking permission to liquidate the company. The hearing was adjourned until Wednesday to give the unions and the company a chance to meet privately under mediation. As Hostess Brands went to bankruptcy court Monday to secure the legal green light for liquidation, unions representing Hostess workers filed objections. In its opposition document, the Bakery Workers Union, BCTGM, said Hostess failed not because of union workers, but because its six management teams over the last 8 years were unable to make it a profitable, successful business enterprise. The bakery workers say despite commitments from the company that resources derived from worker concessions would be plowed back into the company, those investments never materialized. Instead, the union says, quote, helpless Hostess employees watched as money that was supposed to go towards capital investment, product development, plant improvement, and new equipment went to executive bonuses and payouts to the hedge funds that own Hostess Brands, end quote. The bakery workers say the company illegally withdrew from all Taft-Hartley pension plans, netting the company at least $50 million. Then the CEO was given a 300% raise, and nine other top executives got raises of 35 to 80%. The union said that Bain Capital-like private equity funds then came in to squeeze profits from Hostess for their multimillionaire investors. Strike action at the Port of Oakland continues, Jesse Russell reports.
Port of Oakland workers, represented by the Service Employees International Union Local 1021, are in the middle of a two-day strike. The strike started Monday morning with the workers attempting to highlight unfair labor practices by management. According to the union, executives at the port have illegally withheld vital information related to bargaining and have unilaterally changed the terms of the contract. Executives of the Port of Oakland have been facing a great deal of criticism for reports of misuse of funds. Most recently, Port of Oakland Executive Director Omar Benjamin resigned from his post when it was discovered he submitted an expense of more than $4,500 for a business meeting held at a strip club. Even with the news of wasted funds, but also a $37 million surplus, the port has been seeking a 15% wage and benefit cut on the back of the workers. The strike continues today.
Informational pickets are underway at airports across the country as flight attendants at Spirit Airlines press for a fair contract and prepare to strike if necessary. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says 5 years of negotiations have failed to reach a contract at Spirit Airlines. The union earlier this year asked the National Mediation Board for arbitration, which could lead to a 30-day cooling off period and a strike deadline.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Conservatism. Rick Smith.
Got 5 ways to hold your two count. We voted by the way to snuff our voices out. Can you hear us? Are you listening? No power without accountability.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, surprisingly, I was looking at this chart from the folks over at businessinsider.com. They asked the question, what country has the highest percentage of workers employed by the government? Now, you hear the righties talk You hear these radicals talk, the United States, they're all, Europe, they're all, so many, Europe's all hired all these people. And the United States is right there. We're just as bad. Which is why we need to get rid of hundreds of thousands of jobs, and which is why you hear Republicans talking about, well, if we lose public sector jobs, those aren't real jobs. The only real jobs are in the private sector. You know, the ones that don't have health care and don't pay comparable wages. You know, that stuff. But according to the people at Business Insider, I was like, wow, this is pretty impressive. Over half of the workers in China, over 50% of the workers in China work for the government. And the United States, we've got about 14-15%. The UK has right around 20, Portugal about 35, Greece about 38, Italy close to 30, Germany close to 30, France a little over 30. Japan about 5. So I was kind of shocked by that. You're looking at, you know, since we keep looking at China as this grand capitalist society, you know, the communist government is fully bought into capitalism. Yet over half of the workers actually work for the government. And for me, I got to be honest, the job's got to be done. It depends on what it is. I think government should be doing a lot more things. Healthcare being one of them. Paying for my healthcare, I'm okay with that. Administering it, not so much. Making tennis shoes, no, I don't want them making tennis shoes. I don't want the government building, you know, houses or any of that stuff. But I do want them paying for health insurance. And, you know, you look at some of the stories that have come out recently about the health industry, especially when you look at the pharmaceutical industry, where you're seeing, well, you know, people are buying up cancer drugs to make sure that, you know, they can basically screw us. And I don't know if you saw the story today, Agency France Press has one, that you're seeing, you know, these companies buying up all of these cancer drugs, basically cornering the market. And trying to sell them kind of like, you know, kind of doing a scalping thing. You know, where you buy at a low price and you hold out, because so many of these drugs have been, in scarce supply. And again, it's the quote unquote free market. You gotta love it. But you know, you look at this and the righties keep talking about the public sector, you know, all these workers, and we've lost, I think, something like 500,000, 600,000 jobs. And the public sector, which is just making the righties thrilled to death. And again, part of what's held back our recovery, you know, if those people had jobs and not on unemployment, we'd be probably in a lot better shape. But, you know, hey, we got to starve the beast, because that is their mentality. And I look at this thing with American Airlines. I think you're going to see more unemployment. I think you're going to see all these retirees and these people who are close to retirement. They're going to get screwed with their pensions. You got to love conservative world. I know I do. So here we go again. I love language changes. If you'll remember, people are no longer hungry. They're food insecure. And just like people no longer being hungry, evidently we've got no more poor people. They're, you can say it, they're economically insecure. In fact, they're saying, according to the people over at CNN Money, they're saying that more than 1 in 5 people in this country are economically insecure. Why? Well, they saw about a quarter of their income vanish because of the 2008 recession, because of the Bush recession, and they didn't have any money. You know, CNN released this report. They didn't have a cushion. They didn't have savings. They didn't have something to fall back on. Why? Because their wages have been declining for 30 years. Because we've been outsourcing all of the work. You know, we are living the Reagan dream. We are a service-based economy. We're almost there. And if you looked at that China report that they just put out recently, they admit we are no longer the world's largest manufacturer. That now goes to the Chinese. And according to this report, we've got some 62 million people in this country who are economically insecure. That is a massive increase over just 2 years ago, at which you had 46% of the people who were quote-unquote economically insecure, 20% of the nation. That's up from just the late 90s when we were looking at 14%. And what happened? Massive wealth redistribution into the hands of the bank robbers. You know, like the quote that someone sent me earlier. You know, give a man a gun and he'll rob a bank. give a man a bank and he'll rob the world. And, you know, I go back to this thing that this listener sent me, this article, you know, why unions matter. And there are a bunch of interesting points in it. I mean, the reality is you look at the democracy angle of society. How do you have workers who spend 8 hours or more a day in a workplace where they have no rights, no legal rights, no claim to the job? How do you have a society full of people who do that and then expect them to participate in democracy when they have no voice, they have no democratic process on the job floor? To me, that's a pretty important question. You know, where you spend a vast majority of your waking life, you have no say. Because understand, once you cross that threshold, once you punch that clock, you walk in that door, you're theirs. You have no rights. In fact, you don't even have the right to leave if they tell you you can't leave. That's pretty remarkable, I think. And I don't know that many people get that. You don't have the right to the job. Pennsylvania is an at-will state. They can kick you to the curb anytime they want for no reason, unless it's something that's federally protected. Like they tell you on the way out the door, yeah, take your old behind out of here, or take your minority or whatever sex or religion, or if you break one of those, well, there's some minor laws, but good luck fighting for those. But you have no rights on the job. So, I mean, it's an interesting question. How do you get people to participate in a democracy where in their workplace they don't have that mentality? See, to me, it's completely foreign why people would put up with a lot of the things that are going on. Why you wouldn't organize and why you wouldn't stand up and say, I'm not doing that. You know, I remember talking to other truck drivers when I was driving a truck for a living. And they would say, yeah, my brakes are out, or hey, this is broken, or hey, this doesn't work, or hey, you know, this or whatever. And I said, well, why don't you make them fix it? Well, they won't. Then why'd you take it? Well, they told me if I didn't take it, they'd fire me. So you're riding down the road in unsafe equipment because you're afraid of being fired. And that seems to be okay in the minds of some. I'm not one of those people. And I don't think you should be either. I don't think anybody should be. But you look at these numbers, man. The investor class, they know. They know they got us by the short hairs. And I love this. Economically insecure. Isn't that beautiful? It's so soft, and it sounds so, so nice and almost friendly. It's, well, he's not poor. He's just economically insecure. He's not hungry anymore. No, he's just food insecure. He's food challenged. I love how soft of a society we've become. You know, George Carlin used to do a bit about being in the war. You know, back World War I, if you had, you had shell shock. You know, people got that, shell shock. Into World War II, it was battle fatigue. And then into Korea, it was post-traumatic stress disorder. And now it's turned into a syndrome. Maybe had it stayed shell shock, maybe we'd have gotten people some help. And I think he's right on that. Maybe if it's not that, it's soft language. Maybe it would grab people's attention. Just a thought. Because I got to be honest, I don't see people as food insecure. I see people hungry. I don't see people as home challenged. I see them as homeless. It's pretty simple stuff. And when I look at a Republican jobs plan that encourages the use of prison labor, I got to go, really? Is that the best we can come up with? Is that the best jobs plan you got for us? And the sad reality is, well, yes. I don't know if you saw this, Scottsdale, Arizona. It is the holiday season. Hope you've done your Black Friday shopping, your Small Business Saturday shopping, or your Cyber Monday shopping. But in Scottsdale, Arizona, they are having a unique fundraiser. You can take your children to go sit on Santa's lap with a machine gun. I'm not making this up. Evidently, the gun club there has decided that, you know, your 5-year-old would look so good holding a machine gun. You know, maybe they'll maybe even drop them, jump them up like, you know, like they're going off the war. I don't know. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're going to come right back after this. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
You get a good job with more pay and you're okay. Money, it's a gas. Grab that cash with both hands and make a stash.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Let's see. Obama won both the popular vote and the Electoral College tally. Democrats didn't just add to their Senate majority, but added such feisty progressive new senators as Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, and Mazie Hirono. Even in the House, Dems won the national vote and gained 7 seats. Plus, progressives scored victories coast to coast on ballot initiatives. Wow, the only conclusion you can draw is that the Republican Party now has a mandate to set the policy agenda for the next 4 years. Huh? Astonishingly, that's the conclusion of the GOP's congressional leaders. I guess we should have expected as much from a party so deeply mired in delusion that its chief political guru, Karl Rove, kept hotly insisting on election night that Mitt Romney had won, even though he clearly lost. Later, it was surreal to hear Republican House Leader John Boehner declare, "We'll have as much of a mandate as Obama will." Then, going from surreal to insane, the GOP's Senate sourpuss, Mitch McConnell, proclaimed, "Now it's time for the president to propose solutions that actually have a chance of passing the Republican-controlled House." Memo to Mitch and Boehner. America just had a year-long nationwide debate on whether to keep pampering Wall Street hucksters and tax dodgers, privatize Medicare and Social Security, continue whacking the country's social safety net, maintain fat subsidies for big oil, repeal Obamacare and other aspects of your coke-headed, tinkle-down, ridiculous policies, and you lost. This is Jim Hightower saying, far from accepting such twaddle from these GOP fabulists, it's time for Obama and the Democrats in Congress to go to the people who elected them, mobilizing this great grassroots majority to push passage of a bold progressive agenda of percolate-up economic prosperity.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Newt Gingrich was talking about his stance on drug policy. And he said, you know, we need to be more aggressive. We need to have a more aggressive, he said, my general belief is that we ought to be, more aggressive about drug policy. He says he supports the death penalty for high-level drug smugglers. And he says, you know, you look at Singapore, they have very draconian policies, and it's very successful. I'm sorry, not a death penalty fan. I don't think it works. But, hey, we do have a border with Mexico, but that's a whole other quarter. He says he was very serious about minimizing drug use in America. Says he doesn't think that throwing people in prison is the right approach, which, you know, kind of strange coming from him. He favors medical help and drug addiction treatment. Now you got Herman Cain and Ron Paul, who they've both come out and said we should legalize medical marijuana, where Gingrich is saying, no, don't want to do that. He says, you know, don't want parents to tell their children it's okay. It's acceptable behavior. There's part of me that goes, yeah, I can see that. But his stance on tougher drug penalties, you know, maybe it would start by, you know, doing something with the border with Mexico. Maybe just an idea. Just a thought. But also Newt wants to get a little more aggressive in stamping out drug use. So he seems to think we should be testing everybody. In fact, he said, I think we need to consider taking more explicit steps to make it expensive to be a drug user. He says it could be through testing before you get any type of federal aid, unemployment compensation, food stamps, you name it. So basically, you know, hey, before you get any help from anybody, we're going to test you. I say, you know, maybe we close off the Mexican border. Just a thought. I'm a fan of that. Especially the trucks. And I don't know if you saw the story, but a judge has jailed a Mexican truck driver for 15 years and 8 months for his role in a conspiracy to bring drugs here into the U.S. From this tunnel from California to Mexico. His name is Daniel Navarro Chavez, 45. He will spend the next 15 years and 8 months in jail because they caught him driving back and forth in a 600-yard tunnel underneath the border where they came up in a you got to love it. I mean, you know, the fence didn't seem to help that, did it? But, you know, they had these tons, 20 tons from the tunnel and 10 tons in a semi-trailer. We're talking tons of drugs. And we're going to open up our border. So they're not going to have to build the tunnels anymore. They're going to be able to just ride through right down the roads that we've built. And they keep telling us, oh, we're going to test, you know, we're going to check every vehicle. We're going to inspect everything. Yeah. Do you know how many, of all the containers that come into this country from abroad, you know, all the big ships that come into our ports, do you know how many containers they actually physically inspect? It's less than 0.5%. Now they do some radiation testing on most of them, and they do some X-raying of some of them. But for the most part, good luck. Cause it ain't happening. They don't have the manpower or the willpower to test everything that comes into this country. And now the Teamsters, along with the Public Citizen and the Sahara Club, they've filed a lawsuit. They're trying to block the opening of the border, and I understand a couple of, they've already begun some of the process. But, you know, the Teamsters, along with, like I said, Public Citizen and the Sierra Club, are saying, hey, you know what? Not only is it an environmental disaster, not only is it a public safety disaster because you're talking about older equipment, it's also an economic disaster. Now, this isn't part of the lawsuit, but it is. I mean, this is insourcing workers. I guess we're not going to use prison labor. We'll just bring in people that we can exploit from other places. And if you look what happened to the trucking industry around the globe, especially in Europe where they've tried this, where they've opened up the border to, well, the places who are at the bottom of the economic scale, you ended up losing that industry in the wealthier areas. Understand how this has all worked. You know, why do you see so many over-the-road truck drivers from the southern part of the U.S.? Because there aren't many jobs there. So they ended up taking those jobs, those over-the-road drivers driving all over the country. Well, they've gotten a little too expensive. They've gotten a little uppity, saying, you know what, we'd like to eat and wash our clothes. Maybe that's too high. Now what they're going to do is they're going to move a little south, a little further south, open up that Mexican border. And then when they get a little uppity, they're going to move a little bit further south. And before you know, we're going to be getting people from Guatemala driving up here all over the place because they're going to be the cheapest labor. This seeking, this diving for the cheapest labor at some point has to stop because it's not good for an economy and it's not good for our society. And you can say, well, you know, that's just the trucking industry. That's a lot of jobs. And those are jobs that, you know, when I'm talking college graduates, although I know a lot of college graduates who do drive trucks, I know people with PhDs who drive trucks because they love the work. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a great profession. But we're losing it. Going to end up losing that. Why? So big multinationals can save a couple of bucks. And I'm, you know, thank goodness that the Teamsters and other groups are saying, you know, enough already. We've got to stop this. And what frustrates me, again, another example of, you know, you got a Democrat in the White House who's pushing this stuff because the business community is holding this nation hostage. They are willing to take this country down. They are willing to burn this nation to the ground to get their way. I mean, I know two-year-olds who are more willing to compromise than the business community of this nation. If they don't get their way, it ain't happening. And this is part of that. So understand why Obama's opening this up. And I understand. I don't like it. I'm frustrated. I'm angry. But I understand it. Mexico understands who in this country holds sway. And that's the agricultural industry. That's big agribusiness. It's not mom and pop farmer. Don't start with that stuff. Oh, you're hurting the small family farmer. No, you're not. These are the big multinational. This is Monsanto and Archer Daniel Midland and these huge mega corporations. What Mexico did is they said, okay, you're not gonna live up to your end of NAFTA that you signed back in the 90s. You're not going to open that border like you said you would do. We're going to put tariffs on 92 specific targeted items that we know they have lobbyists, we know they have political sway, and we're going to squeeze them a little bit. Just give them a little push, a little squeeze. Like the guy with the Charmin, just a little squeeze. And listen to them squeal. And listen to them run to their senators and to the representatives and to the president saying, oh, my donors, you know, they need help. That's what happened. And the lesson that most people are taking is, well, you know, this is big corporations, you know, getting their way, or, you know, this is free trade, this is free markets. What I take from it is the power of tariffs. I mean, really, the lesson here is how powerful putting tariffs on things are, saying, you want access to our market? You're going to do what we want you to do. And it's foreign to me that as the most powerful nation on the planet, which I think economically, too, for a very short period of time, we are still that, why we would not say, if you want access to our consumers, who on Black Friday spent over $50 billion in one day, who on Small Business Saturday spent tens of billions of dollars, and on Cyber Monday spent almost $1.5 billion. You want access to those people? You got to build the stuff here, like the Chinese do. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me that, you know, we've gone through the old Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, I Surrender Saturday. And the only economy we really stimulated is the Chinese economy, because half of the stuff that we bought, half of the cheap plastic crap came from China. And not only the junk. You know, you go back and you look at that report that our government put out about China and said, look, the high-tech stuff, they sent us about 80, I forget what the numbers exactly were, but about $84 billion worth of this high-tech stuff they sent into the U.S., and we sent them about $13 billion. But I thought we were supposed to be the high-tech manufacturers. We weren't making that cheap junk. We weren't making the plastic pens and the little sippy cups. We were making high-tech stuff. We're losing that, too. And why? Well, because you've got these big multinationals who've made these agreements over in China. You got these huge corporations who, in their self-interest, not the interest of this nation, understand, multinational corporations don't give a tinker's damn about the United States of America. They care about themselves. They care about their shareholders. They care about their profit margin, their CEO bonuses. That's what they care about. And all of this nonsense, oh, we care, yeah. If you cared about this country, you'd be bringing jobs back to this country. Oh, I know. It's those evil labor unions. It's those unions who raise the cost of labor. Yeah, keep buying that line, ding-dongs, because it's not even remotely close to the truth. But it's a nice line. It's a simplistic line, and it's something easily repeated early often. You know, they talk about the steel industry in this country. Well, it's those evil unions put the steel industry out of business. Well, it's not. It was the fact that we had corporations who didn't invest in their businesses. You know, my ex-wife's father was a supervisor at Bethlehem Steel for years. And he said back in the 60s, they had brought in people from Japan to go through the mill. And they basically in the early 60s taught the Japanese how to make steel, but doing it in a more efficient way. They took that knowledge back. They took it to Japan, and they did it in a more modern, efficient way because, as he said, what went on in Bethlehem Steel in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, was probably a process at least 50 years outdated. It was the most expensive way, probably, to make steel at the time. But the corporation was too busy investing in hotels and golf courses and all kinds of other things to worry about the steel industry, because they were ready to move it offshore because, hey, we can get environmental breaks, we can get labor breaks, we can get all kind of breaks over there, huge incentives that they'll pay us, and then we can ship that stuff back in here tariff-free. It's a beautiful business decision. And for a couple of industries to do it, it was probably great at first. Oh, this is fantastic. But as the entire economy shifted out of this nation and left this hollow shell of a manufacturing base behind, look what's happened to the most powerful economy on the planet. Well, we got, what, 14 million people unemployed? And a lot of the people who are quote-unquote employed are underemployed. You got more people working in retail than you've got in actually building things. We're becoming a sales nation. You know, I go over to some of this outlet mall there in Reading, where, you know, they sell all kind of stuff made all around the country. All around the globe. You name the country, there's something probably made there. Not U.S. made, but there's something made there. It used to be where they actually made the clothing. Not now. They just sell the clothing there. There's no making there anymore. It's all about selling. And that's what's happened to this nation. And it's a damn shame. Because we've let these politicians off the hook. We've let them get away with this. And I blame, you know, I blame Obama, I blame Clinton, I blame a lot of them. But I blame you, and I blame me for allowing it to happen. Quick break back after this with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. A sad, sad day. Like I said earlier, you know, that conference call this morning with Herman Cain and his senior staff, I'm really worried. I'm worried that my content for the coming months, that my comedic punchlines going to go away because he told his staff over the next several days he's going to be making a decision whether he wants to stay in the race, which kind of tells me, there must be some truth to this claim. Anyway, I've got Ellen Ratner on the phone, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you so much.
What do you think about this thing with Herman? I think she's got to have some dirt that's verifiable, which is why he's looking for a way out.
Oh, is a 10-pound Robin fat? Absolutely. I mean, I got to tell you that she comes off as totally believable. The other one's okay, you know, he made a pass at her. It's very hard to prove.
Right.
13 years?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be something there. A card, a text message, a phone message, something that he did. And, you know, but here's the thing. In a way, I kind of feel sorry for Hermie because I don't think he ever thought he was ever going to be noticed.
That's right. I thought he did it to sell books and
exactly.
That's it.
That's it. This was a book tour. This was to get him some notoriety so that maybe he gets a gig on Fox or on, you know,
be
one of
the... Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I mean, he stuck his nose out there. And if it were me, I would have come out, and since he claimed to be running a different kind of campaign, admit it. Say, yeah, you know, I'm a human. I'm a man. I made a mistake. I'm trying to, I'm human. God forgave me. Do that whole thing. The base, I think, would have sucked it up.
Exactly.
But instead, he chose the tried and true, no, I did nothing, which is going to be his undoing.
Right. Very much so.
So Barney Frank is retiring, a 71-year-old guy. He's looking down the road, probably. I got to be honest, I don't know that at 71 I want to be bickering and fighting and carrying on. But some interesting folks taking credit?
Yes. Well, the Tea Party is taking credit for Barney Frank. They're saying because they took over Congress, they made him give up his chairmanship because they took over Congress. They're totally responsible for Congressman Frank deciding to retire. Now, the guy is 72 years old. I worked on Barney's first campaign for state legislature 39 years ago, in 72. So, I mean, he's been through a lot.
Right.
And, he's a Harvard Law School graduate. He did that at the same time. Somehow I don't think the Tea Party is responsible.
Well, I mean, here in Philadelphia, the Tea Party people here, they took credit for the big Black Friday sales, with their boycott. Because, they were angry that the Occupy Wall Street people were calling for a boycott. So they very cleverly came up with a boycott. And, they claim they told American people, and the American people went out and followed the marching orders.
Very, very, very much so. And, listen, they are taking, as you said off air to me just before, they're taking responsibility for the whole world. It's like they're making a magic wand, and they think they've created everything, including the good numbers on Black Friday.
And the sad reality is there's only a handful of voices out there who are going to, turn that back on them. For the most part, the messaging is, yeah, you're right, you're wonderful, you're terrific, because all the money is behind the Tea Party.
Yes. But, I'm not so sure. I think that their message has been... I think that the message of the Tea Party people, honestly, has been lost by the very effective messaging of the 99% by Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, the power of feet over dollars.
That's right.
And speaking of feet, something in Iran happened? The British embassy was trashed?
The British embassy was trashed big time, and you show these cops and sort of riot gears going after the people that are trashing the embassy. But, of course, they didn't prevent it. And people in Iran just don't, unless it's a huge movement like it was during the Ayatollah, they just don't take off. It's very much a police state. And so the Iranians are trying to convince the Western world that somehow their government had nothing to do with it, and nobody's buying it.
No, I don't buy it. I think anything that goes on over there, they stage for the most part.
100%. No question. Particularly even the photos of the cops trying to deal with these people.
I don't know. I got to be honest with you. I don't know that if I were, an ambassador, if I would want to be there.
Oh, Iran? The thing is, I've been to Iran, but it was in the 70s. It is a beautiful, amazing country. But I'll tell you, they are crazy over there.
Yeah, I know. I go back to when I was a kid. I mean, this has been a problem that's been going on my whole life, just about. When I was a kid, I remember the Iran hostage situation and all of the fervor and all the insanity over there. And again, for me, why aren't we getting out of that area? Leave them to the sandbox. Leave them alone.
Good point.
So the omnibus bill, the minibuses, which were supposed to be, have turned into a big spending bill. Is that going on?
Well, that's right. Essentially, there were going to be these three minibuses, and I think the first one passed, and I don't recall the second one. So now, Rick, they're going to put them into one huge bill, like $800 billion, you know, almost a third of the whole budget, and that's what they're going to try and pass.
Try.
So they can go home for Christmas.
I think try being the key to what you just said. Try.
Right. But, all of a sudden there becomes great bipartisanship when it's a few days before the holidays.
Okay. Well, I see that the Republicans have come around and said maybe they might possibly consider voting in favor of the payroll tax cut that Obama wants. They just don't want to pay for it. Or they want to do it a different way.
Well, yes, but they haven't really given any ideas of their different way, and they don't want to give Obama that win. But if they don't give Obama the win, then what are they going to do to go back to their constituents and say, we didn't vote for the payroll tax decrease?
And to me, I mean, the rational thought in all of this is, you know, if you're not going to put a small circuit, and it is a very small tax on the very wealthy of this country, then you go after
2.3% on people who make over $1 million a year.
Yeah, I think they can afford that. It's like a cup of coffee to you and me. But, you know, at the end of it, if you're not going to go that route, then let's go with a financial transaction tax, something that's going to bring revenue into the country and be able to make sure that we have the ability to respond to problems.
And frankly, allowing people to cut on the payroll tax is a great thing.
Well, I mean, there's part of me that says, you know, doing this, you're cutting part of Social Security as well. And I know they're trying to pay for it. But I worry that down the road, once you've opened this door, it stays that way. That's one of my big concerns. But I give the president credit. He was right. This was the most efficient, effective way to get it into people's pockets. In fact, they didn't even know they got it. Unlike when Bush gave out his little gift, he sent a letter so that you could know that your Bush prize was coming in the mail.
Right.
And spent $18 million doing it, but you knew your Bush prize was coming.
You did know your Bush prize was coming. And I really don't see how the Republicans are going to go home over the Christmas vacation or have their town halls or whatever with this kind of thing going.
So you think they're going to pass that somehow, but what do you think about the unemployment? Do you think that's going to get cut off at the knees?
I try and cut it off at the knees, but don't forget, a lot of these people are from, even the Republicans, are from not wealthy areas, and people are not happy.
So we will see. I'm anxiously looking at, because I think the payroll thing will go through.
The polling, Rick, has shown that what the Republicans are doing, that people are not sympathetic with their position.
Yeah, but, you know, part of me thinks they're not worried about it this far out, and they've got the money, they'll be able to take care of it next year during the election season.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, I almost can't wait. And I'm looking forward to January, and I'm really hoping Herman Cain stays into this. Because I would love...
What are we going to do without him?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the end of the... Snow White and the other six dwarfs, they'll still bring... I'm sure they'll bring in one of the substitute people.
Well, did you hear what Rick Perry said today? Oh, my gosh. And I'm sorry, not Rick Perry. Why am I blocking on his name? The former governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, said he thought that that Michelle Bachmann would make a fine vice president for Mitt Romney.
Yes. All of them. There's still some comic genius there, but just not poor. I'm hoping poor Herman stays. I'm just hoping that. Anyway, Ellen, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
is Rick Smith.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight we turn back the clock to what we were talking about this time last year. We'll be back live and in the studio on Monday. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, the Rick Smith Show.
Running with the devil, I'm maybe running from the devils, since we are seem to be the proud supporters of Palin Santorum, and I mean, Palin never jumped in, which is no real surprise. There wasn't enough money in it for her. And is Santorum still involved? I mean, have we seen Tricky Ricky on the stump? He's the Herman Cain character, out there looking for a job. And you got to give him credit. He's willing to go out there and push his bizarre ideology, and it's going to pay off again. I'm sure once this is over, he will find himself a nice think tank gig. They'll keep him well comforted, just to continue to push that bizarre mentality they've got going on there. David K. Johnston, who I think is an outstanding tax guy, somebody who looks at the realities of what's going on with our tax code. He wrote an interesting piece over at Reuters, and talking about what happened in New York as this judge, this Theodore Jones, and his colleagues on the New York Court of Appeals rendered a decision that said, you know, it's okay for the state to give private corporations a huge gift. And in fact, a $1.4 billion gift to this Global Foundries Corporation, which is owned and controlled by a Dubai company. And the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Khalifa bin Zayed Al Nahyan, they're saying he's probably one of the wealthiest people ever to live. So the good sheikh there has this company, and you know they shook down the state of New York for $1.4 billion, and they're saying what David K. Johnson's saying is it works out to about $1 million in subsidies per job. I don't hear the righties screaming about this. Where are the anti-tax people? Where are the crusaders to save the taxpayer dime? What happened is you had 50 taxpayers who sued because they said, you know what, we shouldn't be giving this kind of money to these corporations. And I agree. We should not be continuing the beggar-thy-neighbor economic development that's been going on. To me, and I've talked to congressmen about this in the past, I think the federal government should be putting their foot down, saying, look, no more beggar-thy-neighbor, no more here we're going to give you huge taxpayer subsidies. You use the Commerce Clause, and you make sure that states aren't stealing from each other. Because all we seem to be doing is rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic when it comes to manufacturing. And this Global Foundries, you know, they knew... You know, they knew they had New York by the short hairs because, well, you know, they're a high-cost place of doing business. So we needed to make sure that our profits were secure. Make sure that we had the money to offset the higher costs. Now, understand, and this is one of these weird things that David K. Johnson points out. The court ruled that it's okay for the state of New York to give $1.4 billion, just a handout. Here, thank you. The New York State Constitution, he points out Article 7, Section 8, states that the money of the state shall not be given or loaned to or in aid of any private corporation or association or private undertaking, nor shall the credit of the state be given or loaned to or in aid of any individual or public or private corporation or association or private undertaking. Now, I read that, seems pretty simple. You don't give private corporations money from the people. But that's exactly what they've done. They have handed out $1.4 billion. And you look at this report that this Kevin Thomas has put out, professor at the University of Missouri at St. Louis. He's saying now that state and local gifts, this economic development money that we seem to be so fixated upon, is costing the nation about $70 billion a year nationwide. So you're talking about a massive $70 billion subsidy to corporate America. Saying here, you know, just for being here, are we one nation or are we 50 individual nations that are fighting each other for every scrap? I mean, at some point, I think you have to start going, you know, this isn't working so well. We're giving all this money to these corporations, and if you remember the report that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I look at that Pepco Holdings. I don't even know what Pepco Holdings does. But I know for every dollar of profit that they earned, we subsidized them with 57 cents. So they made a dollar profit, we paid them almost 58 cents in subsidies. Does that make sense to you on any real level? But I look at this, and again, anything in the future is going to be damn near impossible to stop because, you know, this is a New York problem, but we do it here in Pennsylvania too. I mean, you look at the money that gets thrown around, and I'm hoping that this governor, one of the things he said he wanted to stop doing was giving out those big cardboard checks, and I'm hoping that happens. But you got to hope it happens on a national level because if one state says, I'm not going to do it, well, they're going to end up losing all of their stuff because we've had this race to the bottom. We've had who's willing to open their wallets and who's willing to sacrifice and suffer the most, especially when you look at the auto plants. You know, I had done a TV show a while back with the auto bailouts, and when they were coming out of it and they're employing people, communities were starting to grow, and, you know, they said, well, we subsidize the auto industry. I mean, we've been subsidizing the foreign auto industry for a generation. You look at, you know, down in the southern part of this country. You got the Nissan plant in Georgia. You got the Volkswagen plant in Tennessee. Hyundai in Alabama. You got all of these car dealers, these car manufacturers in the southern part of the country. How do you think they got there? They got there because the states gave them massive subsidies. And in fact, Tennessee, the way I've seen it, gave Volkswagen $1 billion in subsidies. $1 billion. And you go, you know, maybe had we done that to the American automakers, maybe, just maybe, possibly, just a thought, they would have been in much better shape. You know, I remember when they were talking about closing the Ford Avon plant in Avon, Ohio, because the city wanted to impose a massive increase in tax on them, you know, so they didn't have to pass it on to the taxpayers, because they hadn't raised taxes on the property owners in the area in years. They just kept going back to Ford, the big Ford plant, because that was a big cash cow, and all the people in the community benefited because, hey, you know, we got this cash cow, we're going to keep sucking that thing dry. All the while, in the southern part of the country, you're seeing them subsidizing the corporations. See how this thing all went wrong? You had the companies who were paying the freight. They were paying for education because they needed educated workers. They were paying for police protection. They were paying for roads and bridges because they needed to get their products to services. And they were paying for it, as they should be. But then, you know, we can start beggaring thy neighbor. You start going down into Tennessee and Alabama and all these other places where now we start subsidizing companies. And it just wasn't in the South. You know, Cleveland did the same thing, did a whole bunch of tax abatements and a whole bunch of free power giveaways and all kind of subsidies and sweetheart deals for these corporations to move jobs in and out of different areas. And what happened was these companies go, hey, we kind of like this. It's kind of nice, them paying us for a change. Tax bills went unpaid. School systems started to fail. Roads and bridges started to crumble. Look where we are. This is 30 years of deindustrialization. This is 30 years of saying, corporate America, you're free to do whatever you need to do. we're not going to ask you for anything. And now you've got Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs out there running around saying, well, we need to drop the corporate tax rate even lower. The 999 plan, which according to Herman is a 909 plan, because corporate America can get out of paying taxes. They can have the zero rate. And that's what they want. Understand, the Republican Party bought and paid for, man. The Democratic Party bought and paid for, too. Not to the same extent, though. They're trying to save a little bit of face. At the end of the day, though, it's going to come down to you and me. And I go back to what my government teacher said. You know, what side of this are you going to be on? The Republican Party, they're the party of the rich. They're the party of the wealthy, of the big corporate special interests. The Democrats, they're the party of big government and the poor and social programs to help build up the bottom. Question is, where on that scale do you fall? Are you closer to being Warren Buffett, or are you closer to being that homeless guy that I gave a dollar to this afternoon so he can get a cup of coffee or something to eat? That's the question. And that's where you used to fall on that sliding scale. And the vast majority of us, we like to believe that we're going to be Warren Buffett one day. We like to be forward-looking. But what the reality is we're much closer, and the numbers are bearing that out. 1 in 5 who are economically insecure, a good number of us are closer to being poor and homeless than we are to living in the gated communities next to the Buffetts and the Gates. So the question is where do you go from here? What happens in 2012? You look at the Super Dud Committee that came up with nothing. There are some draconian cuts coming to the military, they claim, which I'm sure they'll figure a way of weaseling out of that. The Bush tax cuts are going to expire in 2013, which I think is a good idea. I'm telling you, I think 2012 is that moment in history where we go, that's where the country either got on the right track or went straight to hell. Pretty simple. And the more we educate ourselves, the more we debate in public and not just throwing platitudes past one another and shouting at one another and throwing slogans near one another, but actually having substantive discussions about what kind of a nation do we want? Do we want to have a two-class nation where you have a handful of robber barons and then the rest of us who feed them, take care of them? Or do you want to have what my grandparents' generation built, a large, massive middle class full of active, engaged, not only consumers but also voters who saw tomorrow as a better opportunity for their children and were willing to fund it? You know, we keep talking about, oh, we're taxed enough already. Go back and take a look at the tax rates of the 1950s. Go back and look at that and then tell me if we're taxed enough already. The reality is back then we were taxed a lot more, but we also expected a lot more from our government. I say we need to have those discussions. Anyway, tonight I want to thank all of our guests. I want to thank you for being here, and Brett, the guy who keeps everything on the air, twisting the knobs over there behind the board. Again, if you want to contact me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Of course, if you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast at therickssmithshow.com, or if you have a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go with you. Have a great night. We'll see you back here again tomorrow. Again, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Have a great night.